using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Friday the 12th of April, year of our Lord, 2024. Well, today we're going to take a quick look at O.J. Simpson, as everybody else has looked at, and of course, so many different facets of his life, and a lot of changes that happened around trials. He's kind of at the center of America getting distracted into becoming a celebrity culture. And then we'll talk about politics, which is also now a celebrity culture. We don't really care too much about justice or principles or constitutions, but we will take a look at that, and we will also take a look at what is happening with even more pullback against this Arizona situation. We now have Sean Hannity weighing in on this because he's all Trump all the time. No principles, pandering. Well, it was kind of interesting to see how this was headlined on the Drudge Report, for example. Cancer murders OJ. He's going full Norm MacDonald on this, I guess, the Drudge Report. And there wasn't a whole lot of love or sympathy for OJ yesterday. The 1994 murder case of his ex-wife and her friend, that he beat the rap on that, but then they found him guilty in a civil trial. He got a $33 million judgment there. Didn't pay a penny of it. Continued to live a life of luxury with large houses, Bentleys, and other things, even to the extent that he had to go to jail for several years because he attacked somebody that over issues with his memorabilia. But I'll begin, actually, with a personal story about Karen and O.J. Simpson, my wife. Karen, not O.J. Simpson. Karen was, when she was in high school in New York, she twirled for the New York Jets. This is before they had NFL cheerleaders. It was a totally different thing. And she was very good at twirling. As a matter of fact, she got a scholarship to go to Midwestern University. I think it was Kansas. She decided to go to Florida anyway. And she instead, I should say, because she wanted to go to Florida, the guy who did the baton twirling, who was in charge of it, had a lot of world champion baton twirlers. He got her an interview with the Rockettes, which she said, now I want to go to Florida. So, yeah, she had to meet me. Didn't even know that. But she was being pushed with all these other things happening. But when she was a twirler for the New York Jets, it was when Joe Namath was there. And she thought he was cute, I guess. And he was injured and not playing. And she was back in the tunnels that they have in the stadium. You've seen pictures of that type of thing. And she was a little bit ahead of the other girls that were there. And most of them were quite a bit older. They were not in high school. She didn't have anything to do with any of the parties or anything like that because she was too young. But she was a bit ahead of them. And as she's starting to go down the hall, she sees coming around the corner, he's on crutches. She didn't see him. She just saw his purple velvet pants. As he swung his leg out to start to make the turn around the corner. And she turns around and starts to run back to them, and she runs into this other player, smack dab into him, and says, I just saw Joe Namath. And he laughed, and she went back and started telling the girls. I said, do you know who that was? She said, no. I said, that was O.J. Simpson. I said, who's he? So she had a bit of a run-in with him. It wasn't with a white Ford Bronco, but she didn't know who he was at the time. Back in the mid-90s, people will remember the day, if you're around that point in time, when they had the very slow speed chase of the white Ford Bronco televised. They even interrupted a championship NBA game to, that's how big that was. Interrupted that to cover the white Bronco. But again, he was found not guilty. The trial went on for an incredible amount of time. It gave birth to Court TV. And many other things, you had the celebrity lawyers, the Daddy Kardashian, you had Alan Dershowitz, of course, all these guys that were there. And the trial was only supposed to last for a couple of weeks, but it just went on and on and on. The judge was giving interviews. Everybody was giving interviews. It was amazing. There were other things that were happening, but nobody really cared in terms of TV watchers. So he got a later there was a civil trial, $33.5 million for they said committing murder of Ron Goldman and also of OJ's ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson. The debt and the interest has ballooned to over $100 million because he didn't pay him anything. So they're going to try to collect from his estate. Good luck with that. But it didn't have a lot of long-lasting effects on our media celebrity culture that we're still feeling today. Now it's moved into politics, which has really become mass murder as well, hasn't it? Since 2020. Despite incredible fame and success in his football career, he'll be more remembered for his involvement in the murder trial. The most famous murder trial in U.S. history. Prior to that murder trial, they had had a televised trial of Ted Bundy, but it didn't get the kind of sensationalism and coverage that the O.J. Simpson did because, you know, he's already a very well-known football player to everybody but Karen. And he was, been in movies and that type of thing. By that time, she knew who he was as well. So the chase scene, again, as I said, it was a championship game between the Rockets and the Knicks. And NBC cut away from the game to show this slow motion car chase. It was really a strange thing. High profile team of defense lawyers as well, besides his own celebrity. And so it was the longest trial in California history. It was slated to be 2 weeks, you know. And now, so what are we going to have? Well, we're going to have the same type of thing with Donald Trump. Donald Trump didn't kill two people. He didn't kill 2 million. He killed a lot more than that. But we're going to put him on trial for every jaywalking and parking ticket that he's got. We're going to have a criminal trial. And it'll be watched probably by everybody and talked about by everybody. It'll be a media spectacle. He'll love it, just like O.J., and he'll get away with murder, just like O.J., because they're not even going to try him for murder. And neither will Biden be tried. Biden will get away with murder as well. And so will the Republicans and Democrats who supported them, who remained silent and remain silent to this day about what these guys did from 2020 on. So it even had an effect on the demand for a 24-hour news cycle. We seem to think about how these things were always there, and yet they weren't. The networks noticed that they had drops when the Simpson trial went away. And even things like the Oklahoma City bombing couldn't compete with the O.J. Simpson trial. It really is amazing. It also coincided, as I said before, the launch of Court TV. And Court TV filmed proceedings, added commentary to bring the average viewer up to speed on the court cases. The not guilty verdict was achieved in part thanks to the defense trying to turn the proceedings against the L.A. Police Department. That's what Dershowitz said he thought was the winning strategy and the lasting effect of it. To say, well, we got black people on one side, we got the L.A. police on the other side, they're trying to entrap him. The black jury agreed with that and let him go. But Norm MacDonald did not let him go. He was very persistent. And looking back on it, it is true. Rolling Stone said there was nothing inherently funny about O.J. Simpson's nearly year-long trial on two murder charges. His ex-wife and her friend had been brutally stabbed to death. Prosecution was arguing that Simpson's history of domestic abuse in the marriage as well had culminated in that. He was also a celebrity football star and the rest of this stuff. And yet, on Saturday Night Live, they're going to comment about it because it's the biggest current event that is going on. And so, as Rolling Stone put it, they had no choice but to cover it. So how could they make light of this tragedy? Well, enter Norm MacDonald. He'd just come in as the faux news anchor. They said in no time at all, it became one of the most crucial Simpson commentators of the day, precisely because the rules of journalism did not confine him. He didn't have to say, allegedly, and he didn't have to wait for a verdict. Instead, operating as if Simpson's guilt was axiomatic. He bluntly stated it as settled fact, while he stared into the camera and dared you to disagree. Babylon Bee takes their shot at it. Police are slowly escorting a white hearse containing O.J. Simpson. The procession, which traveled at low speed with law enforcement working to prohibit any other vehicles from getting on the freeway, allowed onlookers to have one final chance to see Simpson being followed by police officers. One last time, for old time's sake, said one witness who watched the white Bronco roll by, followed by dozens of police cruisers. He died as he lived. It's poetic when you think about it, and you have to feel for the police, too. They never really did catch him, did they? And yet here they are, still pursuing him. Really makes you think, they said. Well, one more from Babylon Bee. O.J. Simpson excited for God to tell him who the real killer was. Yeah. I'm racking my brains for decades trying to figure out who may have done it, said Simpson. It'll be great to have all my questions finally laid to rest. I really can't imagine who might have committed such a crime. Well, I think God knows, don't you? And I think in the end, we all know that justice in this life will be served in the next. We'll be right back.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Let's take a look at celebrity politics here. The presidential race, of course. That's where they don't kill one or two people, as I said before, but they kill millions with jabs, with wars, with medical protocols. And here is the comedian that is still delivering material for everybody. This is Joe Biden saying, elect me, I'm in the 20th century.
Elect me, I'm in the 20th century. 21st century.
He doesn't even know what century he's in. Trump is pushing for debates. After hearing that, he wants a lot more of them earlier. Seriously, he is pushing for debates. Can you imagine that? The guy who has been dodging debates left and right. But, you know, for Biden, he'll make an exception. As a matter of fact, he wants to really ramp them up. Three debates is not enough to have with Biden. He wants to have seven. Well, you know, he could have had seven if he would have debated these other people. But he didn't want to debate anybody else. He calls for more and earlier presidential debates with Biden. You know, in the same way that with all this vote by mail stuff, you know, you could debate early and debate often. And with the vote by mail stuff that Trump put in, you can vote early and vote often as well. Very much the same thing here. So the Commission on the Presidential Debates has already announced three of them and a vice presidential debate to occur later this year. Lala and somebody else yet to be determined. By the time of the first scheduled debate on September the 16th, more than a million Americans will have likely already voted. And we'll see all these show trials of Trump as well. And perhaps that's going to be an issue. You know, he's got some scheduling conflicts if he wants to do anything else, because he's going to be taking care of his felony parking tickets and things like that. The Trump campaign said the country deserves as many as 7 presidential debates. Yeah, I thought so as well. But he decided to sit out all the ones where he would be debating anybody who actually had a mind. And so in commenting on this, Biden demonstrated exactly why Trump wants to debate him. Biden's comment was, if I were him, I'd want to debate me too. He says he's got nothing else to do. Yeah, really. So when we look at our other politicians like Mike Johnson and this ongoing support of FISA flip-flopping around, even mainstream media is talking about the flip-flopping of Johnson. This is coming from The Hill. Johnson shifts from FISA critic to FISA champion as speaker. What's going on with that? Yeah. A one-time critic of the foreign spy program who's now fighting to usher its renewal through the warring GOP conference. And not only to renew it, he wants to make it permanent. He just wants to do more for it than anybody else has. Johnson has done a full 180, says The Hill, opposing a new warrant requirement for Section 702 for FISA. Actually, what he's doing is he's opposing not a warrant. He's opposing the Constitution. That's what he's doing. That's what Mike Johnson's doing now. He is opposing the Constitution, and the vast majority of Congress is opposing the Constitution. Matt Gaetz said, these were views that the Speaker deeply held like 20 minutes ago. Johnson isn't disguising the change of tune, saying that the reversal is a simple function of learning more about the program as Speaker. Then they took him into a separate area, and I guess they showed him the JFK files or something like that. When I was a member of the judiciary, I saw all the abuses of the FBI, and there were terrible abuses over and over and over, he said. But he doesn't care about those abuses anymore. Then when I became Speaker, I got this confidential briefing, he said, and I saw just how important it is for national security. By that, he doesn't mean the security of this nation. He saw just how important it was for the military-industrial complex and for the intelligence community, and these are the people who put him in place, because he immediately said he's going to continue and escalate the spending for these wars in Ukraine and in Israel. So, yeah, he saw just how important it is for national security. Well, you know, as Thomas Massie said yesterday, if you believe that these people have put some safeguards in there, and if you believe that this isn't a problem, then what explains the fact that Johnson and these other people put in a special protection, an exemption clause in there, saying you won't do this to us. Just do it to the rest of these people out there. But if you want to do it to a member of Congress, you're not allowed. As a matter of fact, if you want to start surveilling us, you have to go to that member of Congress and ask for permission. What a joke. What a joke. They clearly don't believe that FISA protects anybody's privacy. They're setting up a police state for everybody else except for them. I think they're absolutely reprehensible. That's all of the Democrats. And all the Republicans except for 19. Just think about that, how they sold you out. And so Intelligence Chair Mike Turner, a Republican from Ohio, and as I said yesterday, there's this split within the Republican caucus. You got the people who are on this intelligence committee. Oh, they're all for letting the intelligence people do whatever they want. It's like FDA, right? You have the people who are supposed to be overseeing the food and drug people. Well, whatever you want. You know, people call them up, hey, you know, you got this, they're going to be putting this stuff in polyethylene glycol. That's going to cause people to go into anaphylactic shock. Well, I don't care, says the FDA. Call Pfizer. So tell them about it. And of course, they call Pfizer and they don't care. That's the kind of oversight we get from the House Intelligence Committee. That's the kind of oversight. They have set up the bureaucracy to do this stuff. And we are rightfully upset about the bureaucracy because there is no accountability to the bureaucracy. Totally unaccountable, unelected and unaccountable. And yet for these members of Congress, they're unaccountable as well. They keep getting reelected over and over again. And They keep rubber stamping everything. They created the bureaucracy in their image. And they created the bureaucracy so that the bureaucracy can regulate us without any representation or oversight. And then pretend that the Constitution doesn't exist. So you don't have a presumption of innocence. You don't get due process. You don't get protection against excessive fines because, hey, you're violating a rule from the bureaucracy. So it's a civil case. Now, if the Congress had written it, then that would be a law. And the Constitution, the Bill of Rights would apply. But no, we've created the bureaucracy in our own image to run out even more regulations. And then we pretend that the regulations coming from the bureaucracy are not covered under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Because you see, these people don't care even about your right to be protected against warrantless searches. That's where they're coming from. The Republicans and the Democrats. And so this guy, who's now the chair of the Intelligence Committee, said, when you become Speaker, you become one of the Gang of Eight. Now, that's the group that is the leaders of both chambers as well as their respective intelligence committees. The Gang of Eight. So you got four people. You know, you got the majority and minority leader in both the House and the Senate. And then you've got the majority and minority leaders in the Intelligence Committee in the House and the Intelligence Committee in the Senate. You got a Gang of Eight. You know, Mao only had a Gang of Four. And these people are just like him. Just like him. Capable of doing anything for power. Power comes out of the barrel of a gun. It comes out of their surveillance clips as well. The American people don't want their liberties taken away. They want their Fourth Amendment liberties to be upheld, says Representative Scott Perry, a Freedom Caucus member who backs a warrant requirement. In other words, he backs the Constitution. Think about this. Out of the, 450-something people in Congress, only 19 of them want to stand by the Fourth Amendment in the Constitution. The rest of them just throw it on the ground like trash. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, 430-something just throw out the Fourth Amendment. Of course, they throw out all the rest of this stuff as well. You know, the interesting thing, as I said, is what these people who revolt against law and order and the Constitution, when they swear to, as a condition of their office, to uphold the Constitution, and they lead a rebellion against that, because that's what they're doing right now. They're no different from Robespierre. And as Robespierre found out, eventually the revolution comes for you. They are the interesting people. They're not going to get away with this. And it doesn't matter if they even put it into law. You can't surveil a congressperson. You got to ask their permission first. Do you think these rogue intelligence agencies, the CIA and the FBI and the rest of these, you know, the dirty one and a half dozen that are out there, do you think they care about that clause? They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about any law. They don't care about your little parenthetical thing there that you can't surveil me. Huh? See, I got this piece of paper. It says so. You think they care about that? I played that clip for you the other day where Michael Hayden said, we're not interested in bad people. We're interested in interesting people. Who do you think is more interesting to them than these congressmen that they can blackmail? FBI Director Christopher Wray, still pitching his support for FISA reauthorization, said the reforms in the bill would, quote, stop the abuse of politicized FBI queries. So he admitted that the FBI is politicized and abusive. It's not only a police state, it's a politicized police state, as they always are, right? Trump weighed in on Wednesday ahead of the House GOP conference meeting, writing on his social media site that they should, quote, kill FISA, and suggesting the tool was used to spy on his campaign. However, writes The Hill, campaign aide Carter Page was spied on using a different section of the statute that deals with domestic surveillance. Well, there you go. we can always find some other phony justification to violate the Constitution. See, the problem is not ultimately FISA. The problem is ultimately the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, these agencies, which is why they had the FISA Act in the first place. They're the real problem. And yet you can't even get 20 congressmen to push back against something that even the FBI director admits is abusive and politicized. They won't even push back against one aspect of it, let alone the entire agency, the FBI and the CIA. During his time in office, Trump signed into law the current FISA 702 statute. See? Like I said before, all these people, they're coming after Trump. He endorsed the mechanism and the statute and the agency that came after him. And he didn't do anything, not even to protect himself. It's pathetic. He wrote on Twitter at the time, "This is not the same FISA law that was so badly abused during the election." Well, he's lying, just like Mike Johnson. It's not exactly the same. They changed it, made it a little bit worse, actually, as they always do. See, that's the key. Yeah, it's not the same. It's actually worse. Johnson, if you want to know, why has he flip-flopped on all these different things? We talked about that, you know. A lot of people talk about him. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, others. I've talked about it. What is it? Is he being blackmailed? He's been greenmailed, actually. Why has he flip-flopped on FISA? Why has he flip-flopped on Ukraine? Well, in his first full quarter as Speaker of the House, he brought in $20 million. Now think about that. At that clip, if he continues to collect money at that rate, he will have collected in 1 year $80 million. Now, going back to the 2020 election, the 2000 election. Gore versus Bush. Bush spent $100 million total. Gore, $70 million. Now, Johnson could pull in $80 million in just 1 year. He's not even running for anything. And of course, you know, if they kick him out as Speaker of the House and he decides, well, I don't want to run again, he gets to keep that stuff. You want to know why he's flipped on FISA in Ukraine? It's not rocket science, folks. Money talks, and the love of money is the root of all speakers of the House. So, Politico first reported that his fundraising numbers, did it on yesterday, said, "I am grateful for the incredible support of grassroots supporters." Yeah, grassroots supporters. And Americans all across the country who are eager to end the disastrous Biden presidency. Just about as eager as they are to end the Fourth Amendment, evidently, and just about as eager as they are to end peace and to escalate into World War III. We want to have World War III. We want to have warrantless searches and all the rest of this stuff. So his $20 million is close to the $21.1 million that McCarthy netted in the second quarter of 2023. And it's amazing how close these guys are on policy. What a surprise. The speaker previously told Politico that he's grateful for McCarthy's help in connecting him with, quote, thick wallet donors. So there you go. And also grateful for connecting him, I guess, to the military industrial complex and intelligence community. Who installed him as speaker so that he could push these wars, push the police state, and be paid off handsomely. That's disgusting, isn't it? Right, this is a guy who really did a 180. Now, when you look at Trump, he's been a lot more consistent, quite frankly. He's been consistently a criminal. There is a movie coming out. I don't imagine it's going to be very good. They're premiering it at the Cannes Film Festival. And it's about a young Donald Trump and his mentor, Roy Cohn. Now, if you don't know Roy Cohn, I'm not going to go into a lot of history about Roy Cohn. Suffice to say that he was a little rat to Joe McCarthy, the McCarthy hearings and things like that. And it should be an interesting film, except that, you know, it's going to be kind of cartoonish. Anything that people do about Trump is usually either hagiography or it's a kind of a character assassination. Doing a character assassination film on Donald Trump is kind of like shooting fish in a barrel, though. I'm going to assassinate these fish in the barrel. They're going to call it The Apprentice. It's about a young Donald Trump who ascends to power through a Faustian deal with the influential right-wing lawyer and political fixer Roy Cohn. That's their description. Sounds pretty stereotypical. But again, when you look at people like Roy Cohn and Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump, they are birds of a feather. Mr. Cohn became more than just Trump's lawyer. He became a mentor, a close confidant. He introduced the former president to various powerful figures in New York City's business and political circles. He introduced him to Roger Stone and Paul Manafort, right? The former president remained fiercely loyal to Cohn, even standing by him during his final years as he battled AIDS. And that's the interesting thing, too, about Cohn. Just like J. Edgar Hoover, both of them closet homosexuals, who were vicious in terms of coming after other homosexuals, but presenting this image to everybody else as, you know, they're going to protect them from that. I mean, these guys, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, Roy Cohn, these people do anything for power. He was the mentor, by the way, to Donald Trump. What do you think Donald Trump's flip-flopping principles come from? I'm sure that he learned a great deal from Roy Cohn. Trump has been taking some bold anti-establishment positions, but just how much of this is rhetorical? This is Robert Stark and quoting Glenn Greenwald on some of these issues. Trump denounced attempts by GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson to renew FISA and FBI spying powers. However, Trump was the one who reauthorized FISA as president, which RFK Jr. has pointed out. Let me just predict this. Of course, it's not going to happen, so I can say anything I want to about an RFK Jr. presidency. You'll never know, just like climate change. You can make all kinds of predictions about it, but I would tell you this. I don't think that RFK Jr. would do anything to change any of this stuff either. Trump's bold statements have been mostly rhetorical and often contradict his actual policies. My prediction is, and this is... I think it's Robert Stark who's writing this part here. My prediction is that a second Trump term will be more anti-establishment than his first, but it will also have a lot of the same disappointments and the standard conservative positions. For instance, tax cuts for corporations and for the rich, and perhaps an increase in military spending, but there'll be austerity on certain social programs, you know, probably like Social Security. He'll probably throw his supporters under the bus on that. Trump also told billionaire donors that he will cut their taxes, which is what he did the first time around. You know, he cut the taxes of the uber wealthy and the corporations, raised them on others. Trump's main role is not to achieve good policy, and this is the key, but rather to push the Overton window. And when you think about it, how did he push the Overton window in his first time in office? Well, medical martial law, universal basic income, warp speed approval of experimental drugs, trillions of dollars in debt, vote by mail. I call them the Trump precedents, precedent Trump. He pushes the Overton window, and he did it on so many things. It was a very significant presidency. You know, pushing the Overton window on the level of rhetoric and divisiveness. These guys in the past have always pretended, even though they were not trying to get along with everybody, but they always tried to pretend to be congenial, not Trump. So he's pushed the Overton window on a number of things. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment, and we're going to talk real quickly about a couple of updates about the pandemic. We'll be right back.
Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Secrets of the Rapture. Is there a 500-year-old conspiracy? A propaganda machine so pervasive and entrenched, yet so elusive that the entire world could be taken in by it? Working in plain sight, but unseen by the world for what it truly is? If prophecy is God-given history in advance, why does the prophecy that has conquered the age also exclude nearly 2,000 years of history? What is it that they are afraid that the light of history will reveal? To understand our place in time and prophecy, we must look in history for an interpretation, that which stands the test of time, that which agrees with the Word of God, and history has proven to be true. When cunning fables and fearful speculations are removed from our sight, then we may clearly see what is truly expressed in Bible prophecy, both that which has been fulfilled and that which has yet to come. God's express word is the sword that must be wielded to remove the scales from the eyes and dispel the darkness of deceitful conjecture. Secrets of the Rapture was written to expose that which the spirit of the age has conjured out of the darkness to blind the eyes of the church in the world today. Secrets of the Rapture, Deconstructing Pre-Tribulation Dispensational Futurism by yours truly, Nicholas Arthur, is now available at lulu.com and Amazon. Secrets of the Rapture.
Well, one of those Trump precedents, one of those Overton windows that he moved, was the normalization of trillions of dollars in deficits. And now we're up to the rate of, because Biden has continued with that and has increased that. We're now adding $1 trillion about every 3 months. And to the extent that when you go back and you look at this COVID cash, I understand it was fiat cash for fiat orders. And of course, that's redundant because fiat means demand. It means a decree, an order. And that's exactly how these guys got what they wanted, both Trump and Biden, but to a large, unprecedented amount. And now there's nearly $100 billion in COVID relief money that is still unspent. They helicoptered in the cash in such lavish amounts that people can't spend it all. Even state and local governments, who are not known for their frugality, can't spend all the massive amounts of money that was dropped on them. You know, it's kind of like, the aid that we dropped on Gaza, the food aid. Parachute didn't open. It, you know, destroyed buildings, killed people on the ground like a giant bomb. Well, that's kind of the way the cash is as well with the COVID stuff. Nearly $100 billion worth of money allocated to help state and local governments remains unspent. No, it was nearly $100 billion of money allocated to bribe and to command state and local governments to do exactly what Trump and Biden wanted done. That's what's happening with this. The state governments are sitting on $92 billion in unspent COVID relief money, more than $53 billion of which has not even been earmarked for anything. And it's about to expire. They're going to have to earmark it for something and say, we're going to give these people this amount of money. And all this is happening even after we've had these recent revelations talking about the lavish fraud that was done with these programs. And so they've got to earmark it, call it a grant. They don't necessarily have to spend it within the next short period of time, but they've got till the end of 2026. Still got more time. They don't have to spend it by that amount of time, but they got to at least earmark it by then. And again, this is a key issue, because all these people that I talk to, they can't get their head around what Trump did. Well, he didn't do it. It was the governors who did it. And you know that they're operating inside their little partisan voting box when they say it was the Democrat governors, because the Republican governors were as bad or worse than the Democrats were. But they have always used unlimited amounts of money printed by the Federal Reserve. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about Biden or Trump or whether you're talking about Obama or Bush or any of these presidents, even at the gubernatorial level, you know, the governors. DeSantis did the same thing. He doesn't have unlimited amount. A governor doesn't have unlimited amounts of money, but he still used money to say, well, we're going to punish you if you continue to lock people down. For example, if you don't open up your schools, we're going to cut your funding. Just that simple. And so you always use that. Those financial strings, everybody used to always talk about, well, all that money coming from Washington or even from the state capitol, it's always going to have strings attached to it. But the MAGA people can't figure that out. Who was pulling those strings? So this made all the more awkward because this week also marks 1 year since Biden signed a congressional resolution officially declaring an end to the COVID national emergency. You see, they would give these discretionary funds to the governors, as an incentive, you know, the same way that they use the social media companies to censor for them. You know, they would give this money to the governors. And it's like, well, in the case of Idaho, for example, the Republican governor there, Brad Little, had several times, it was like three or four times the amount of the entire state budget given to him to use however he wished. It's like his own personal slush fund to, you know, reward his friends or whatever. And the only thing he had to do was just to keep this lockdown and this pandemic fraud going, and the cash just kept coming. And so what do you think the governors are going to do? Of course they're going to do that. All you have to do, pure power with all of this money, all you have to do is just sustain this emergency that Trump declared. And Trump's declaration was not about health issues, really. That was done by his HHS pharmaceutical bro that he'd put in charge of the HHS, Alex Azar. Trump's declaration of emergency was about releasing the money, just like it was a hurricane that had come through Florida or something. And so the national emergency was officially ended a year ago. Yet 6 months later, tens of billions of dollars meant to help state and local governments through that crisis still remain unspent. Imagine that. The CDC is trying to recoup this crisis emergency footing, and they're trying to get people to take their vaccines again. And so you're seeing this constant onslaught now. Breitbart was one of the first ones to jump into it because they saw an opportunity to talk about measles and to push their borders agenda, right? Scare everybody about the about measles to try to get somebody to do something about the borders. Well, that's not going to happen. It's reprehensible to do that. But now you got outlets like USA Today. They're not tying the measles issue to the borders. They're tying it to vaccine hesitancy and all of us anti-vaxxers. And so USA Today is quoting a CDC epidemiologist for measles surveillance. We're actually paying somebody to do this. I mean, it's like paying somebody, can you surveil Kohl's? And they do. They've done that to push the flu vaccine for the longest time. So this CDC epidemiologist says most of the outbreaks that we've seen during this period have been small and short due to high population immunity. No, they've been small and short because it's just measles. And due to rapid response by state and local health departments to control these outbreaks. You know, we never had problems with these when I was a kid. Maybe that's because we didn't have state and local health departments to make a problem out of it. Measles was once thought to be a disease of the past. No, it was thought to be a disease of no concern when I was growing up, just like with Donald Trump. So now they're trying to create a measles outbreak. This is the approach. Again, conservative media will use it to push fear about the border. And again, there are issues with the border. This is not one of them. Nobody died. This is not like somebody coming through who is a rapist, a killer, a pedophile, or something like that. Nobody died from measles, not a single person. And they've only got a couple of dozen cases that they can even identify. And the median age of the measles patient is 3. That's why they call it a childhood disease. And once you get it, you have immunity for life, unlike the MMR shots. And of course, nothing in life is perfect. You can have some very rare reactions to measles, and that's what they focus on through most of USA Today. They talk about statistics without putting them in any context to say, well, you know, some people have died from this. And we don't know if they died from it or if they died with it, just like the COVID stuff. Far, far, far fewer people than died from the flu. Isn't it kind of interesting that they have really nailed in the MMR shot, but they were never able to nail in the flu vaccine for people. And so they start, how deadly is measles, says USA Today. Well, it turns out not at all. So between 400 and 500 Americans die annually of the disease. Okay, do they die of the disease? Do they die of complications? Do they die with it? And what about the flu? Well, according to the CDC, we had between 2010 and 2023, we had 51,000 deaths annually from the flu. And they're saying 400 to 500 annually from measles? So, 100 times worse for the flu? Do we cower in fear when somebody gets the flu? Yeah, the flu can kill people, especially elderly people. It's really a complication to existing conditions and things like that. I imagine that is the case with measles. I'd never heard of anybody dying from measles before. But they can't even make a case for it. 400 or 500 deaths, and yet with a flu, they have 51,000. And look at that time period there. That was an average, annual average from 2010 to 2023. You know, we didn't have anybody die of flu, really, at all. Remember, we had zero flu deaths. Remember that? It was in 2020 or 2021. They just attributed them all to COVID. I'll never forget when I was leaving InfoWars one day, and Mike Adams was hosting for Alex, because Mike was doing such a good job of pumping up the fear and selling prepper supplies and food and stuff like that. And Mike Adams had a chart that he put up from the CDC. And he said, look at this. You got more people dying from COVID, according to the CDC, than from heart disease and cancer. Well, I guess they fixed that now. They've really upped the heart disease and cancer deaths, haven't they? So you're talking about something that is incredibly rare, something that is less of a threat than the flu, and yet we know how these flu vaccines work. We know that when people get the flu vaccine, it attacks their immune system, they're more likely to get the flu. And we also know that before COVID, the vast majority of injuries were from flu shots. But again, as they keep pushing this fear, the uncomfortable fact for USA Today and the rest of these fearmongers is that there have been no deaths in any of these so-called outbreaks. So they're going back and saying, yeah, we have records where we have attributed this to measles. We've had deaths that we attribute in the years past, but not in any of these so-called outbreaks. Michael Osterholm, director of Center for Infectious Diseases in University of Minnesota, said it doesn't bode well for what the future might bring. Because, you know, we're not going to be allowed to have international travel. We can't keep this measles stuff under control. More pressure to have vaccine passports and the rest of this. They want to control our movement very strictly. Of course, they're not going to ask for vaccine passports for the illegal aliens that they bring in into every place. They don't care if they're vaccinated or not. On Rockfin, Mr. Shinelli, thank you very much for the tip. Says, good morning, David. Everyone on my job site listens to you daily as you come out of my boombox. Well, thank you. Hey, everybody. I love hearing the reactions to Benedict Donald. Your show has opened hearts and minds. Been listening since the InfoWars day. Have a great day. God bless you and your family. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you getting me out there. Who knows? They might actually find something they agree with me on. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a president who actually followed some principles somewhere? You know, just let us know. What is it that you want to do instead of this constant flip-flopping? We'll talk about a little bit more about that, as well as what is happening in Arizona. It truly is amazing. And it truly shows how the Republican Party has abandoned all principles. Just whatever Trump wants, right? Interestingly enough, you know, when the Congress put that thing in there, they didn't put any exceptions in there for Trump or any other president. They just put those exceptions in there for Congress. And it was everybody knew it was a head fake. But Thomas Massie was right when he said it shows that they know that this is about police state surveillance of everybody else except for Congress people. On Rumble, Billy the Kid Part 2 writes, I think most Trump worshipers actually took his juice and just lie and say they didn't. Who knows? On Rumble, Owen61, measles are coming across the border. It could be worse, like antibiotic-resistant tuberculosis and leprosy. I'm glad it's just measles. Well, for now, yeah. Rockfin, Denver Attaway. I've been type 1 diabetic since the age of 12. I got it soon after my MMR vax for mid-school. Diagnosed right after cross-country season. Yeah, that's the thing. And say, well, look at this. We've seen measles go down. Well, fine. What has happened to autism? It's exploded. So you tell me, you know, if we had fully informed consent, what if somebody says, well, it's going to reduce the chance that you get measles, but it's going to rapidly increase, you know, exponentially increase your susceptibility to autism or your chance of getting autism. Well, what would you choose? Would you rather have measles for a few days? Or would you rather have autism for the rest of your life or some of these other conditions that come with the vaccines and the adjuvants that are there? Yeah, the adjuvants. Like Alex Jones. I mean, we talked about adjuvants the entire time. I even had somebody call up one day and he wanted to take me on vaccines. And I said something about adjuvants. And he's like, what is that? It's like, you don't know what adjuvants are? How far back do we have to go in this conversation to give you a starting point here? But, you know, the adjuvants are one of the key things. I mean, it put things to irritate your immune system. And that's one of the things that causes a lot of autoimmune disease in response to these injections. They deliberately irritate your immune system to try to get it to respond to what they're injecting you with. And that in and of itself creates problems. And that's why it was such a annoying thing beyond belief to hear Alex say, well, yeah, you're just going to have some adjuvants in there. They're going to have to step up the adjuvants so that you have a reaction to it. Because, you know, it's going to be this dead or weakened virus. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was an mRNA shot. Did you not get the memo, Alex, about that? Did you not realize what mRNA was? Did you not realize, because you've been talking about it for years, what the adjuvants are? And you're talking about, oh, we're going to just bump up the adjuvants so that it'll look like you really got something, but it's really just sugar water. What cynical lies. It's amazing. I like this phrase, arch COVIDian. It's kind of like branch Davidian, you know, an arch COVIDian. This is coming from the Daily Skeptic out of the UK. And they're talking about a woman who is a German journalist. And she was one of the key people pushing every aspect of the pandemic. She admits that press discussion of vaccines was too one-sided and that the school closures were ill-advised. But she insists that Germany should have locked down even harder. See, this is not going to reverse course, not going to change anything at all. One comment here, Rockfan Brian and Deb McCartney. Good to see you there. Question, David, did you hear that the origin of this so-called bird flu is the feed? I did not hear that. I did not hear everybody talking about that. Waste from chicken farms, diseased birds, droppings, feathers, and all else. Check it out. Well, take a look at that. Yeah. Very much like when they started having this mad cow disease or something, but isn't it interesting that every year we're having bird flu discovered? And we got to kill all the birds and the spring chickens that are there, the little pullets that are coming up. You got to have a massive culling again this year, just like last year. It's become like an annual event. It's almost like somebody's trying to destroy our food supply. And if you feed them a lot of garbage, you know, diseased birds, droppings, all the rest of it, you recycle it through. That's what, you know, mad cow disease was about. They were grinding up dead cows and feeding it back in, and they got mad cow disease, just like human cannibals will get that as well. So would not surprise me with the big factory farms. But of course, if you have your backyard chickens, they've already got a lot of regulations. We'll be seeing that pumped out in September. That's an obnoxious enough regulation, reporting on your backyard chickens and everything else that you're growing for food. You're going to have to tell them in the UK what you're doing. That's obnoxious enough that they are going to wait 6 months before enforcing it. Just to see if anybody's going to say anything about it, I guess. That's what they always do. But getting back to this arch COVIDian, Christina Berndt, I guess is the way you pronounce her name, B-E-R-N-D-T. I'd say Berndt. She should have been burnt by the COVID nonsense, but she wasn't. Since the German government quietly withdrew the last COVIDian idiocies last year, says the Daily Skeptic, there have been much talk of the need for an appraisal of pandemic-era repressions. For the most part, this talk has happened in perfectly inverse proportion to anyone in power actually appraising anything. In other words, you know, they're not doing anything at all. Lockdown happy, vaccine-crazed Süddeutsche Zeitung, that'd be Southern Germany times, I guess, would be a rough translation of that. She wrote this. There were repeated promises during the COVID crisis that the pandemic response would be thoroughly appraised. Yet this has not happened. And there seem to be several reasons for this. First of all, there was nothing to be gained politically from this issue, especially immediately after the pandemic. This is what I'm saying, you know. Why aren't we doing an appraisal of what these people did? Well, because we know how bad it was, and they don't want anybody. There's no political gain for them. It's all negative because everything they did was wrong. She continues, the country was collectively exhausted, and for a while at least, many people didn't want to hear the word corona again, like I said yesterday. Just like the Churchill's War Room, that's what they call it there at Whitehall now. I looked it up. I couldn't remember what they called it, but it's just Churchill's War Rooms. I mean, he was basically living there, and these other people, his staff and everything, were living there under Whitehall in these reinforced bunkers. And when the war was over, they just walked away, left everything on the table, all the maps up, the pens and everything, never even talked about it, never wanted to go back to it. They were sick of it. And that's what's happened. This has been like Churchill's War Rooms. Concerned that a critical reappraisal could be misused by conspiracy theorists, by right-wing groups, or by the AFD. In other words, by their that because they messed this up so much, other people might point it out and make political gains from it. The damage to democracy, they said, could be greater than if there was no appraisal. Democracy? We didn't have democracy. We had medical martial law. They are democracy. Right? There could be damage to them. So their powers have been left behind. Their powers are being escalated. To prevent damage to our democracy, our rulers have tried to get everybody to forget about all the stupid stuff they did between 2020 and 2023. Their efforts to sweep COVID under the carpet have therefore amounted to ceding all criticism of lockdowns, of school closures, and of mass vaccination to the opposition.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
And Handy, good to see you, Handy. One of my gym friends, and Handy works AMS in Georgia. One of my gym friends took the GCI, that's what I call it, the genetic code injection. Now it's almost as if he has arthritis, inflammation all over, and has lost 30 pounds. It took a year or so, but it eventually overwhelmed his body. That's the key thing. I remember when all this stuff happened, and I've been talking about vaccines and all this stuff for a very long time. I was absolutely flabbergasted at how we had so many immediate reactions to this. Right away, you had people who were dying. Right away, you had people who were passing out and other things like that immediately. We had never seen that before with a vaccine. Typically, it took a long time. And as I point out many times, you go back to 2009, when Fauci and Slowey worked together to put out, to rush Pandemrix out, and the whistle was blown on them in Norwegian countries, where they were seeing effects on children because it had a faster metabolism, but it took a year for anything to show up. And they had horrific issues of narcolepsy and things like that. You've had several reports of these kids who are now in their mid to late 20s committing suicide because they can't do anything without the risk of immediately falling asleep. You know, they can be driving a car and all of a sudden they're out, they're unconscious, so they can't drive a car. They can't do anything. It's completely destroyed their life. But it took a year for it to show up in the young kids. And, you know, they just kept on with it everywhere else. But we've never seen it happen immediately. And we've never seen such a blind eye to any and all of these side issues. On Rockfan, Ghost Bo said adjuvants are neurotoxins. Yeah, a child receives no less than 70 injections of neurotoxins by the age of 18, and they wonder why autism has increased by 4,000%. Exactly right. Yeah, all these different things. I mean, were you talking about was mercury or formaldehyde or any other? It's always there to provoke your immune system and to perhaps break it. This is a question from a listener. I'll try to remember to send a direct email to you, Sean. But I do want to mention it on air because there's other people who may have this issue. Please mention the vaccine exemption letter guy. Well, that would be Jason Barker. As I said, can you please mention the name of the guy who's been so helpful with his vaccine exemption letter example and where to find him? Someone asked me about it the other week, but searching the podcast and video archives, I can't find one of the shows with a specific name of the contact. Jason Barker, that's how we got to know Jason Barker. He was in the military at the time. And he did not want his name used while he was still fighting them and in the military. But he's gone public now that he's out. And he gave the letter and we talked about it. I actually posted that letter on the website for quite a while. And he had several very important points about his religious exemption, which you could look at that. And if you agreed with that, you could put it in your own words. And so Jason Barker is now out of the military, and he has with Angry Tiger. They do Knights of the Storm, and he also does Foxhole Report. And so, I don't know. We used to have, like I said, we used to have that on the. I was surprised to see your letter here because I didn't know that they were still trying to push this through with people. I thought we were kind of in the eye of the hurricane right now. So, on Rumble, Delta Mike, 8384. Keep up the good work, DK. Fight that good fight. You appear to have counted the cost before going to battle. A lot of politicians can learn from that biblical principle. Worldly loss, Christ gain. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. So let's talk a little bit about pharmaceutical stuff. We have a molecular geneticist saying that the mRNA shots were designed to destroy humanity. Well, good. I'm glad that we're seeing more and more people come out and say this. Perhaps now people will believe it. A world-renowned, he also tipped $20, Travis is telling me. Thank you very much. I appreciate the tip. He didn't have that on there. Thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. A world-renowned molecular geneticist has blown the whistle to warn the public that COVID mRNA vaccines were designed by globalist elites to destroy humanity. According to Dr. Michael Nels, N-E-H-L-S. The injections were created as part of a plan by the World Economic Forum, the UN, the World Health Organization, Big Pharma, globalist world government. And it's one of the reasons why I talk about these MacGuffins. You know, that's been the purpose of the climate MacGuffin from before we had the climate MacGuffin, from before we had the first Earth Day. And, got a reply here from Jason Barker about the example letter. It is posted on the Knights of the Storm website, in the forums and under archives. So there you go. And I'll give that answer to you by email. But anybody else who needs that, because I was surprised that this was still being pushed. So the plan sought to conquer the human mind by destroying most of the human race and breaking down barriers that were preventing the globalist agenda from being ushered in on a global scale. Nels, a leading expert with insider knowledge of the plot, warned that the mRNA shots were designed to depopulate the planet, allow unelected global elites to assert dominance over those who survived. And as I was saying, that's one of the reasons I talk about the climate MacGuffin and about the COVID MacGuffin is because they both have the same convergence point. They both have the same goal, and that is depopulation. Impoverishment, enslaving the remaining people, but total population control, controlling the people who remain alive, but population control in terms of depopulation. And that's always been the case. Even before we had the first Earth Day in 1970, Paul Ehrlich was pushing his book, The Population Bomb, and he was widely, you know, very famous for doing that. But he became, and that idea was at the core of it. I was in high school at the time, and I remember my best friend in high school completely bought into this. And I would just change the subject whenever he get on it, because, I mean, it was like this religious fanaticism with him. You know, he almost grabbed you by the lapel. we got too many people. We're all going to die. Well, okay, that should solve it, right? But anyway, we still have to wake up. These people are focused on the precious, the White House. They don't understand that even though Biden is wicked and false, that so it's the guy that they're following. And it's a distraction. They've misdirected people to focus on the one thing that they're not going to be able to have any positive results with. mRNA vaccines are aiding cancer. Yeah, isn't it interesting? We're seeing all these celebrities coming, the cancer is coming back, and it's coming back really fast and hard, but we're seeing this everywhere. And now you have a study in the International Journal of Biological Macromolecules saying that the mRNA vaccines aid cancer development due to the use of modified mRNA that is designed to suppress immunity. Yeah. So they said, due to the health emergency, yeah, it wasn't an emergency. Due to the health emergency created by SARS-CoV-2, no, it was an emergency that was created by politicians. The rapid implementation of new vaccine technology was necessary. No, but it wasn't necessary, but it was planned and practiced. mRNA vaccines, being one of the cutting-edge new technologies, attracted significant interest and offered a lot of hope. These vaccines, in preventing admission to hospitals and serious illness in people with comorbidities, have recently been called into question due to the vaccine's rapidly waning immunity. In other words, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Never did work. It had immediately, it was known that it didn't work. Immediately, it was known that it was not safe either. Not safe, not effective. We always knew that from the very beginning. So these people, again, this is quoting from the article. And this article is saying, trying to couch this in a way that won't get them fired from their position. And so they're trying to be very obsequious and deferential to the vaccine. But, you know, it does have its problems. It has rapidly waning immunity. And mounting evidence indicates that these vaccines, like many others, now they're criticizing vaccines in general, do not generate sterilizing immunity, leaving people vulnerable to recurrent infections. When they talk about sterilizing immunity, that was a part of the lie where they said, you need to get this because if you get it, you're not going to pass it on to other people. That's what they mean by sterilizing immunity. And of course, that didn't happen either. Additionally, it has been discovered, and by the way, for the measles stuff, that doesn't work either. One case, so-called outbreak, four people in New York, patient zero, and all of the four people that got it had been vaccinated, some of them multiple times. It didn't keep them from getting it. It didn't keep them from passing it on to other people. It didn't give them immunity, and it didn't give them sterilizing immunity. Additionally, it has been discovered that the mRNA vaccines inhibit essential immunological pathways, they said, thus impairing early interferon signaling. This inhibition ensures an appropriate spike protein synthesis and a reduced immune activation. So this is a new mode. We knew from the very beginning. It was early on, I think it was May of 2020, had Dr. Ryan Cole, who was a pathologist, and he said, I'm looking at these people who were coming in and they've been injected. And he said, I'm seeing very, very low killer T cell counts. Killer T cells are going to be one of your main defenses against cancer. He said, I think what we're going to see is a massive increase in the number of cancers, and I think we're going to see them progress a lot faster. Today we call that turbo cancer. And that's what this paper is about. Evidence is provided that adding 100% of N1-methyl pseudouridine to the mRNA vaccine, as is done with Pfizer and Moderna, in a melanoma model, stimulated cancer growth and metastasis. That's why we call it turbo cancer. That's a pretty good description of it. It simulates cancer growth, and it's metastasizing. Non-modified mRNA vaccines induced opposite results. This suggests that the mRNA vaccines could aid cancer development. Well, there you go. So it works. It does exactly what they want to do, which is to kill people, right? And then when it comes to some, there's so many different things that have been identified, all of them dismissed. In Saudi Arabia, you have a study done at the King Faisal General Hospital by microbiologist and immunologist Muazzam M. Sharif and his colleagues. They noted that more than a quarter of COVID injection recipients suffered some cardiac complication after getting the mRNA shot, the ones made by Pfizer or Moderna. We call those the Trump shots, the Trump genetic code injections. And how much more? Well, they said a shocking 27% suffered a heart-related complication within a month to more than a year after the injection. Some of them, it was right away. Again, that was the thing that was truly amazing, was how quickly we started seeing these things and how it ramped up very rapidly. Remember, you know, within just a couple of weeks, we've got more people that have immediately had adverse effects put into the VAERS database in just the first couple of weeks than we did with all the other ones for a year. And then it's kept going within a couple of months. It's more than all 35 years combined. And that was even after they threatened people to not report this stuff. Besides making it very cumbersome and time-consuming to report, they actually threatened people. So, anyway, isn't it interesting, as they said at the very beginning, you know, they were saying more people dying of COVID than of heart disease and cancer. Well, you know, were they giving themselves an alibi with that? I guess they've taken care of that anyway. The study had 804 participants. About 40% of the participants took just one injection, meaning that they did not complete even the initial two-shot series, let alone get any booster injections. And yet, still, 27% of them had heart complications. 27% had cardiac complications. Nearly 15% of the mRNA injection recipients reported experiencing heart-related symptoms within a month of the injection. So, about half of them. You know, about a quarter of all of them had problems, and about half of those who had problems had them within the first month. The rest of them, it took up to a year or more. As reported by Children's Health Defense, Dr. Peter McCullough said nearly 16% of all COVID injection recipients who developed cardiovascular symptoms had to be rushed to critical care for treatment. That is how bad their symptoms were. More than half of the subjects indicated that they were influenced by a healthcare professional or government agency to get vaccinated, said Dr. McCullough. Never in recent times has there been such a cardiotoxic vaccine released on the public. Well, let me just say this. You know, he said about 16% of them had to be rushed to the hospital because it was very obvious of what they were having. That means that 84% of them who were not rushed to the hospital, many of them had no idea. This is why you're seeing the died suddenly stuff. You got a lot of people who have heart injury, but there's no symptoms until they suddenly die. You know, they're an athlete, they push it, and now they don't realize that they had myocarditis. This is why in a lot of hospitals, this happened about a year and a half ago, they started talking about, without acknowledging what was causing it. They said, well, we're going to start screening kids who want to participate in high school sports, and that started happening in a lot of different places. This is great. Isn't this great? We've now got screening stuff, and it's like, why don't you ask the question why this was never necessary before? Why now? What is it connected to? We all know. They think we don't know, but we do know. In Japan, a Japanese medical school professor sounding the alarm about the dangerous push by powerful global organizations to shorten the development period of mRNA-based vaccines from what used to be a standard of 5 to 10 years to 100 days. And a move that they say is possible only by ignoring the human rights perspective.
And again, this is coming out of Japan. And one of the things that he's concerned about is the fact that there is a move afoot to do a lot of this, move a lot of this stuff to Japan. Let me tell you why I think that's the case. Now, this is just a hunch. Japan has been more transparent in these problems than pretty much anybody else. And I imagine they would like to get them some money so they kind of don't notice. We've had Japan throw away 1.2 million doses because they noticed these black particulates that reacted with magnets. It's like, what's this? I don't know. Killed, got rid of 1.2 million doses of it. And then it happened a second time. The second time, it was about a million as well. They, as I pointed out, talked about the biodistribution of these active particles all over the body. And they didn't like that being talked about. When a Canadian doctor started talking about it, they purged him. So the Japanese have noticed and have quietly taken action. So I imagine they want to get there, these pharmaceutical companies, they like to co-opt people. That's what they did with the media. That's what these Ask Your Doctor commercials are about. Let's do these Ask Your Doctor commercials. We'll get authority to do that with from the Clintons. And then we will spend so much money on these ads that we become one of their primary, if not the primary sponsor for Fox and for CNN and for MSNBC and for all the different news organizations, even the broadcast news, ABC, CBS, NBC, they're all on the hook. And we all knew what was going on, except supposedly Tucker didn't. You know, Tucker had it explained to him by one of his guests who said, Tucker, you know, these Ask Your Doctor commercials, that's not really targeted towards the listening audience. That's really just giving money to the networks so they don't cover the adverse effects of these drugs. Oh, I never thought of that, said Tucker. Yeah, right. That's one of the people who's getting paid tens of millions of dollars a year. He never thought of that. So that's the way they co-opt people. Do you think they would do that with the Japanese government, with Japanese medical people as well? Because what they're talking about is setting up large manufacturing facilities there in Japan. And that's why this guy is speaking out. He's a professor emeritus at Osaka City University Medical School. He specialized in molecular pathology and medicine. And he said the pandemic was used as a false pretext by the WHO to drive vaccinations of all peoples in the world. Operation Warp Speed, he said, was a plan to set up to shorten the time to develop vaccines, which usually takes longer than 10 years, to shorten it from 10 years to less than 1 year. Seems like we've talked about this before, but we'll talk about it one more time. Here's Fauci. In October of 2019, before all this, just as the stuff was about to kick off, he's at a conference there by the Milken Institute.
You have to prove that this works, and then you've got to go through all of the clinical trials, phase ones, phase twos, phase three, and then show that this particular product is going to be good over a period of years. That alone, if it works perfectly, is going to take a decade.
Why don't we blow the system up? I mean, obviously, we can't just turn off the spigot on the system we have and then say, hey, everyone in the world should get this new vaccine we haven't given to anyone yet.
It's going to be very difficult to change that unless you do it from within and say, I don't care what your perception is, we're going to address the problem in a disruptive way and in an iterative way, because you do need both.
But it is not too crazy to think that an outbreak...
And that guy is from BARDA. So that was the Milken Institute, the Future of Health Conference. And that guy says, how do we blow this system up so we don't have to take 10 years? You know, then we start making money right away. He was from The New Yorker. And all of that stuff happened as this was about to roll out in October. Yeah, we do it from the inside. We do it with chaos, and we do it with disruption. And we do it iteratively. The insufficiently tested Trump shots were rushed to production distribution, resulting in drug-induced injury that has never been seen in human history, said this guy, this doctor who specializes in molecular pathology. His name is N-O-U, I guess, N-O-U. I-N-O-U-E. I believe that the fraudulent use of experimental gene therapy to healthy people, particularly to healthy children, is an extreme violation of human rights. He said, plans are in the works to construct a new vaccine production system in preparation for the next pandemic. This is an unbelievable, crazy situation. And he warned that the Japanese government is joining with CEPI. That's Gates's Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness and Innovation. And so they're joining to be a part of this 100 days mission. That's how they do it. They, vaccine companies, the Gates companies, co-op governments and media by partnering with them and paying them off, paying them for their silence and their cooperation. Led by Richard Hatchett, I guess we could say it's a Hatchett job, who once worked under Anthony Fauci, CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation, was founded in 2017 by the World Economic Forum, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and others, with the aim of truncating the vaccine development process to 100 days, which is exactly what they're talking about, in October of 2019. If they are successful in their quest, the good doctor in Japan, NOA, said there's a high risk that Japan-made vaccines will be exported to nations around the world. If Japan were to become a vaccine perpetrator, it would leave irreparable harm to future generations. See, Trump was a vaccine perpetrator. The message I would like to convey to the world is that when disease X occurs in the future, you should never trust the Japan-made vaccine that was developed in a short period of time in order to protect human rights in cases of control that transcend national boundaries. You should never trust the American-made vaccine or the German-made vaccines. As a matter of fact, you have journalists in Germany talking about the fact that BioNTech, which is a German company that partnered with Pfizer, they were doing this because they envisioned Germany becoming the center of the pharmaceutical vaccine industry. Now you got the same thing happening in Japan, also happening in the United States. These people are always angling for some kind of global hegemony in the economy, and they're willing to kill people just like if they were angling conquer the world through a war, because that's what this is. World-renowned physicians and scientists are calling for the mRNA COVID products to be pulled due to safety concerns and lack of efficacy, wrote Dr. Tess Laurie, commenting on his speech. She said, but at the same time, vested interests regard these products as a business model for the future. Because that's what it is. One way that the WHO, CEPI, and their partners hope to streamline the development of future vaccines is by eliminating drug trials. And one of the ways that they're going to do this, folks, this is a new wrinkle we haven't talked about before, is replacing these drug trials with AI-generated, in other words, fake simulations. I say we haven't talked about this before. We haven't talked about the AI aspect of it. We talk about something being in vitro, right? What does that mean? That means that they did it in the glass. If you've got in vitro fertilization, that means that they've got an egg and they've got some sperm and they're putting it in a test tube, and then they will implant it. Okay, after it's been fertilized, right? That's in the glass is what that means. They have talked about when they do their so-called testing, if they do it using a computer model, they call that in silico or in silico. I can't remember now. But, you know, what they're saying is we're doing the testing not in a glass, but we're doing it in a computer, in silicon. And, of course, you know what that's worth. We had the Imperial College of London simulation that Fauci and Birx handed to Trump, and he talked about that. And it was a garbage model. It couldn't produce the same answer with the same input twice in a row. University of Edinburgh pointed that out. But hey, it was the Imperial College of London, and it was Fauci. And so these are very smart people. Just do whatever they say. They're going to, not only are they not going to do any tests, they're going to pretend that they did the test. They're going to pretend that they accelerated the test because they used artificial intelligence. So we'll have fake human subjects that are AI generated. I wonder, you know, since we saw all that stuff from Google with Gemini, will all the subjects be black? Black or American Indian? I mean, that's what they did with the Gemini project. You know, right? Any historical figure, no matter where, made them all black, female, Indian, different things like that. Yeah, you want to take a drug that's been tested by the people who did Gemini? Using AI to generate data for control and experimental groups of patients appears to be an avenue to cut more corners in woefully under-tested approved vaccines, like Pfizer, Moderna, says Brian Hooker, PhD, Senior Director of Research and for the Children's Health Defense Fund. That's where these people are headed with this stuff. And finally, when we look at the longer picture, as I said, this is about population control impoverishing us with the green agenda and these other lockdown measures that they have, impoverishing us into slavery so they can control us better. But the other way they control populations is by killing people. So they got fewer people to track, fewer people to control. And when we look at what is happening in Europe, one of the worst places in Europe for this right now is Greece. The tumbling birth rates will be difficult, if not impossible, to reverse, says Exposé News. As much of Europe struggles with tumbling birth rates that experts say threaten long-term economic well-being, imagine that. See, the problem wasn't that we had too many people. Now the problem is we got too few people. Because when you've got a large group of people, the chances that you're going to have somebody come up with some kind of a breakthrough to make things better for everybody increases. Always heard this. You know, people, I talked to friends that I worked with who were British who had come over and said, yeah, America is always going to continue to increase because they just got a much, much larger population base. So you got this broad population base. You're going to find people there who are going to be good scientists. Oh, that was before we started the federal control of education, where we started deliberately dumbing people down, before we told people that math is racist and all the rest of this nonsense. But, you know, having that big base of people, that gives you an opportunity to excel. Greece's fertility rate is one of the lowest in Europe. Some villages have not recorded a single birth in years. The government is planning in May to unveil new measures to boost birth rates, according to Reuters. The plan includes cash benefits, affordable housing, financial incentives. Yeah, all of that is fiat cash, right? We're going to give you straight up cash. We're going to help you with housing. We're going to give you other financial incentives. It's bribery, bribery. That's how they get everything done. Fiat cash for fiat orders. That's why I say when people can't understand, oh, Trump didn't do any of this. He did all of it because he was the guy who was passing the bucks out when he started it. And, you know, Biden gets that blame as well because he continued that program. That's how they control everything. They want people to have more kids, pay them to have more kids. You know, if they have more kids than you want in China, what'd you do? What'd they do in China? They took money away from people. They would penalize them severely for having another child if that got past the number. So you give them cash, you take cash away. That's always the way that they control people. And then, of course, the other part of it is to bring migrants in. That's the backup plan if the bribery doesn't work, or if they've already gone too far in terms of sterilization. However, similar measures have fallen flat in other EU countries in recent decades, and demographers expect very little difference in Greece. Even those who are putting together the plans doubt that it will work. Finance member in Greece said this is one of the most serious problems we face, not only in Greece, but in the EU as a whole. And we are only a half of a step behind them here in America, if that far. Yeah, it is depopulation for the environment. Paul Ehrlich, the population bomb and the rest of this stuff. And we look at their birth rates and how they were falling. And you look at the death rate, and the death rate went vertical, literally vertical, with the introduction of the vaccines in Greece. And the population growth rate also went vertical, going down with the introduction of the vaccines, straight down. The mass COVID injection campaign in Greece began December of 2020. And as of February 2022, 75% of Greek residents had gotten at least one COVID injection. That's what it's all about. Yes, the depopulation bioweapon. We'll be right back.
Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
For American Family News, I'm Chris Woodward. Memphis police are mourning one of their own who was shot and killed in what's being described as an unprovoked attack. Fox's Jeff Manasso has more.
Officers responded to a report of a suspicious car. Two other officers shot, one hospitalized, two teen suspects involved. One killed and returned fire, the other being treated. We're told one of them was arrested just weeks ago in a stolen car with a Glock switch that converts a semi-automatic weapon into a machine gun. He was charged with stealing two vehicles before a Memphis judge set him free without bond.
President Joe Biden continues to announce what he calls student loan debt relief. Fox's Jared Halpern has this story from the White House.
All told, the administration says $153 billion in student loan debt for 4.3 million people has been wiped away through various actions since a broader forgiveness proposal was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court last year.
Elaine Parker of Job Creators Network Foundation says this tired exercise represents a blank check to universities that will only cause college expenses to rise further, exacerbating the tuition crisis. Parker adds that this is a pure vote-buying strategy that does nothing to solve the root problem, unaccountable colleges. Former Fox News and CBS reporter Catherine Herridge was on the Hill yesterday talking about a bill that would protect reporters and their sources if passed. Steve Jordahl reports her experience shows the need for such a law.
A couple months ago, she was unceremoniously dumped by CBS and forced to leave her reporter's notes behind.
When I was laid off in February, an incident reinforced in my mind the importance of protecting confidential sources. CBS News locked me out of the building and seized hundreds of pages of my reporting files, including confidential source information.
Herridge told the House committee she'd been dragged into court by a Chinese national named Yanping Chen, who said Herridge's reporting back in 2017 when she was with Fox about possible military leaks to the communist Chinese government made Chen look bad. Chen demanded, and a federal judge agreed, that Herridge burn her confidential source. She's refusing.
If you cannot offer a source a promise of confidentiality as a journalist, your toolbox is empty.
Herridge says when the network of Walter Cronkite seizes your reporting files, including confidential source information, it's an attack on investigative journalism and, in fact, feels like the worst kind of personal attack.
I can only speak for myself. When my records were seized, I felt it was a journalistic rape.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Lawmakers in Maine apparently listen to the voice of the masses. That's explained in this report from AFN's Charlie Butts.
The legislature debated a bill that would enshrine abortion up to birth as a constitutional right, which is how extreme liberal Democrats are on the issue. Mike McClellan of the Christian Civic League of Maine tells AFN it takes a 66% vote to move a constitutional amendment forward.
A threshold for any vote of 66% is quite high, and I'm proud to say all the Republicans in the House, which was 68, and all the Republicans in the state Senate, which was 13, all voted against this bill.
McClellan adds members of both houses apparently were listening to their constituents.
The Maine people came out in droves, thousands of people came out, and it just would seem like they have figured out that they actually can come to the legislature, they can speak their mind. They may not get what they want, and that's why you have elections, but the Maine people are doing it. They are letting this legislature know they're not happy with what's happening.
The legislature could not come up with enough votes, so the state constitution is safe from becoming an abortion document.
In final news, the U.S. is investigating a Ford recall for gasoline leaks from fuel injector cracks that can cause engine fires, saying that the remedy does not fix the leaks. It covers nearly 43,000 Ford Bronco Sports and Escape SUVs with 1.5-liter engines. Find more news on AFN.net.
Secret of the Rapture. Is there a 500-year-old conspiracy? A propaganda machine so pervasive and entrenched, yet so elusive that the entire world could be taken in by it? Working in plain sight, but unseen by the world for what it truly is? If prophecy is God-given history in advance, why does the prophecy that has conquered the age also exclude nearly 2,000 years of history? What is it that they are afraid that the light of history will reveal? To understand our place in time and prophecy, we must look in history for an interpretation, that which stands the test of time, that which agrees with the Word of God, and history has proven to be true. When cunning fables and fearful speculations are removed from our sight, then we may clearly see what is truly expressed in Bible prophecy, both that which has been fulfilled and that which has yet to come. God's express word is the sword that must be wielded to remove the scales from the eyes and dispel the darkness of deceitful conjecture. Secrets of the Rapture was written to expose that which the spirit of the age has conjured out of the darkness to blind the eyes of the church in the world today. Secrets of the Rapture, Deconstructing Pre-Tribulation Dispensational Futurism by yours truly, Nicholas Arthur, is now available at lulu.com and Amazon. Secrets of the Rapture.
Rumble. Silver Bullet says, diversity is handguns and rifles. Well, let's talk about, we won't talk about lead right now. We'll talk about some other precious metals, gold and silver, but mostly about inflation. You know, when I was talking to Tony yesterday, everybody uses the metaphor of the man behind the curtain, right? I never thought about the Wizard of Oz at the end of the program where he blows up the balloon and he takes off and Dorothy's like, wait for me, you know, come back. I don't know how it works, he said. Well, that's basic. That's one of the best metaphors for central banks I've ever seen. You know, they fill the balloon up with a lot of hot air from politicians. And then once this thing takes off with inflation, they don't know how to bring this thing back, even if they wanted to in many cases. Take a look at what is happening with the post office. Stamp prices have risen by 8% for the second time in 4 months. We need to bring back Lysander Spooner. Travis did a report on him in high school and won a competition in the U.S. and Canada from the Fraser Institute. Lysander Spooner saw incredibly expensive postal rates, and he went into competition with the post office. And he was doing such a great job, they created an act of Congress to outlaw what he was doing. Prices are once again galloping away from the Fed's 2% inflation target. The post office announced stamp prices would also rise to a record high for the second time this year. First class mail forever stamp will increase to 73 cents on July 14th this year, up by a nickel from the 68 cents the previous one cost. When they first introduced a forever stamp in 2007, the price of the stamp was 41 cents. So what we've seen is in 17 years, the price of the stamp has gone up by 78%. This is the second time the price of the forever stamp will increase this year. It rose to 68 cents in January from 66 cents prior to that. Mailing and the forever stamp is a way of trying to hedge against their inflation. Mailing a postcard domestically will soon cost 56 cents, a 3 cent increase. The increases are hurting mail volume and their bottom line, and it's also hurting consumers, nonprofits, newsletters, greeting card publishers, magazines, catalogs. They've got an organization called Keep Us Posted. And so they're talking about this, but what do you do about it? You got a government monopoly. You think they're ever going to get the price down on this stuff? And quite frankly, they would love to see, I think, physical mail go away, just like they'd love to see physical cash go away. Think about it. Wait, there's more, because today we celebrate soaring prices not only through postage stamps, but also through mass transit. According to Bloomberg, the New Jersey transit riders can expect higher prices after the systems board voted to raise fares to help cover a $107 million shortfall, a 15% fare hike, which would go into effect July 1st, would be followed by a 3% increase each year after that to account for inflation. And as Zero Hedge points out, just in case you're wondering what their real inflation target is, it's not the 2%, it's the 3% target. But it kind of reminds me of a song that was charting when I was a kid, young kid. You know, will they ever return? No, they'll never return. The MTA, you know, fight the fare increase in Boston. This guy gets on and they raise the prices and he doesn't have enough money to pay for it. And he just keeps going around and around. I guess he's got to pay to get off. I don't know, but that's where we are right now. And it's not just the postage stamps. You also have on Long Island, You have doctors who are making $350,000 a year, can't find homes that they can afford because the homes are going up, radical increase in the price of the homes. The interest rates are going sky high, and the supply of homes is really cut down. So the prices have surged by 50%. Bloomberg is saying how even doctors making $350,000 a year are struggling to find places in areas like Long Island. And this is, again, you know, started talking about Karen's New York life up there that's in Suffolk County where she was. People can't find homes. They've always had a really expensive part of Long Island, which was, you know, the Gatsby's and people like that. But this is in previous middle-class areas of Long Island. Home prices surging 50% to nearly $1 million. Available listings plummeting by 60%. And then, of course, interest rates remaining very high. Upstate areas like Buffalo and Syracuse also face soaring property prices, compounded by restrictive zoning. So the government will always come in and make a situation like this worse. You can always count on local government to make it worse. if you don't pay attention to local government as well. So Suffolk County was singled out because they had the lowest rate of housing growth of anywhere in New York. But it's not just that, and it's not just in New York. It's also people are getting concerned about energy. And as I point out, this is something that we haven't really seen this kind of inflation in energy since OPEC embargo that kicked off the stagflation and massive inflation of the 1970s. And of course, what kicked it off this time? Biden and his sanctions, Biden and his green rules. I mean, we don't have OPEC. We should call it, I guess, BOPEC. Could name it after his son that he thinks died in Iraq, even though he didn't die in Iraq. He's mentioned that multiple times. So I guess we could call it BOPEC because it really is coming from Biden's sanctions and his green obsessions. And of course, it's not an obsession. They're just paying these people. It's part of the global agenda. But the energy is always a foundation of these out of control inflation situations, and it's right at the foundation of Bidenflation. Tens of millions of Americans are having trouble paying their power bills as electricity inflation continues to run rampant. So what's the solution from Biden? Well, that means that we got to shut down everything that's not on the power grid. And then at the same time, his EPA wants to shut down the power grid as well. We're going to get rid of the functional fuel stations. Nobody talks about a coal shortage. Why is that? Because there isn't a coal shortage. Even when it was fear porn in the wake of OPEC, they're saying, you know, we've hit peak oil. That was what the CIA wanted everybody to believe. That's one of the reasons why they still call it fossil fuel. The CIA wants people to believe that there's only so much oil in the ground as Tower Power had a hit song. I don't know if it's a hit song. It's just that the group I was in did a lot of Tower Power covers. Only so much oil in the ground. Sooner or later, there'll be none around. Alternate sources of power must be found. Because there's only so much oil in the ground. Can't cut loose without that juice. Anyway, they don't care. They don't want us to cut loose. They want to keep us bound in place. And they're not looking for alternative sources because we're running out of energy. They're just saying, you're not going to use that. And I don't care if my source of energy works or not. It doesn't have to work. You're just not going to use that. That's where we are today. And so solar power and wind power, very expensive. And it's not just the cost of installing it the first time. They don't last. You know, solar panels start losing their ability to convert sunlight to electricity. The windmills wear out and fall apart. It's very expensive to keep it going. You have to spend tens of billions of dollars usually to run lines out to where the wind power is being generated and to get it back to the grid because it's usually done in remote areas where the wind is blowing a lot. And so it's very expensive to set up, very expensive to maintain. And now, because they're going to get rid of the power plants that have been there to back them up when they're not working, they want to put out these massive battery energy storage sites, BESS. And those things are not only incredibly expensive, but of course it'll be like Elon Musk and his battery operations that will be making a lot of money from this. Not only are they incredibly expensive, but they are unbelievable fire hazards. the worst yet of any of the lithium things. And so, you know, it's only going to get worse, but this is a deliberate thing that's being done by our own government. It's not being done by some foreign sheiks who are upset about what is happening. And of course, all through the 70s, everybody was saying, well, you know who OPEC is? It's really the oil companies. And there's a lot of truth to that. Well, there's no question that this is all domestic now. It's not foreign terrorism. It's domestic economic terrorism. In Oakland, for example, they're dealing with elevated pump prices, out of control, violent crime, and the largest electricity utility, PG&E, gave them a 13% jump in power bills. So we can't imagine who is causing and what is causing all these problems, can we? Yeah. CPI for electricity is zooming. In other words, the consumer price index. The first time we saw anything like this was in the wake of the 1973 oil embargo. Electricity prices running higher for the rest of the 1970s. But now we have BOPEC. And the next, one article titled The Next AI Trade, they're talking about how they're racing to increase generation capacity to accommodate new demand of artificial intelligence data centers. They tried to create an entire narrative to shut down cryptocurrency by saying this mining stuff, it's just, uses too much energy. We can't do that. I mean, it will burn the planet up, right? That was going to be how they're going to sell CBDC. Remember, Biden in March of 2022 gave him 6 months. All of the deep state, every one of the alphabet agencies come back and report one of four areas. How are you going to completely restructure the financial system was one. How are you going to implement the code to do CBDC is another one. How is the FBI and the DOJ going to and the IRS going to force people to use this? And the fourth one was the environmental climate aspects of it. And so this has always been there. They don't care about how much energy and water is used by these massive data sites for the NSA, and they don't care what is being used by artificial intelligence. And yet, it is a big area. And not only is Biden electrifying everything, transportation, cooking, heating, cooling, all this, it's all got to go on the grid. But now you have these artificial intelligence data centers to join the surveillance centers as well. America is becoming unaffordable and unsustainable. And as all this is happening, the IMF is working how to get rid of the dollar. Brandon Smith talking about the global reserve currency status and how the IMF is talking about how they want to shift over. Made no mistake, no secret of it. The IMF is talking about it. The Bank of International Settlements, the BIS, the Central Bank of Central Banks, they're all talking about how they transition over to it. What Brandon Smith talks about is the fact that over 60% of all U.S. currency is abroad. And so how could they perhaps use that to collapse what is happening here in America? So when they were talking about centralized ledgers in 2023, the IMF said, well, as a global and a multilateral institution, we're sort of aiming to provide a basic connectivity, a basic set of rules and governance that is truly multilateral and inclusive. In other words, globalism. The ambition is to aim for innovation that is compatible with policy goals that are inclusive relative to the broad membership of the IMF. In other words, to unify everything. You know, one structured global governance, not necessarily a global government, but all these different components, these NGOs, governments, and corporations, multinational corporations, bring all this stuff together. So the BIS is talking about having their universal ledger, a ledger of, also they refer to it as unified ledgers. One gigantic blockchain to rule us all, to essentially put us in chains. Following, listen to what they say, dematerialization and digitization. Yeah, beam me up, Scotty. We're going to dematerialize the economy and beam it up to the internet. We digitalize it and we tokenize it. This can be seen as the next logical step in digital record keeping and asset transfer. You know what they mean by asset transfer. Transfer all their asset, all our assets to them, where we own nothing. The three major assertions made by the BIS and their program is, first, we have to digitize money. They said that's unavoidable. Well, we'll see about that. Second, our existing decentralized payment methods are unacceptable. Only central banks are qualified and trustworthy, they say. They're neither qualified nor trustworthy. Third, unified ledgers are largely designed to track and to trace and even investigate all transactions for our own good, of course. And so this is where this is happening. But as I mentioned before, 60% of the physical dollars are outside of this country. And so he says, think about the kind of liquidity crash that you could have. He says the dollar has to die because it's an integral part of the old world, the old material world. We had physical things. So that's one reason why it's got to go. And he says, remember, it was originally defined as 371 grains and 4/16 part of a grain of pure silver. And so tangible assets like that must go. So he says, I believe that a sizable percentage, this is Brandon Smith talking, of the American populace would resist a cashless society. But in the meantime, there is still the inevitability of a dollar crash to deal with. There are trillions in physical dollar paper dollars held overseas that would start to flood back into America all at once, causing a historic inflationary disaster when all these dollars come back. Exactly the kind of disaster that might convince the nation to accept a new digital currency. He says that's one reason why it's absolutely crucial to own physical precious metals. They're untrackable. They're a non-digital form of money, like gold and silver. It'll be even more highly prized in the near future than they are today. And again, davidknight.gold will take you to Tony Arterburn as Wise Wolf Gold. And you need to start thinking about how, if they want to dematerialize and digitize everything, maybe you need to run the other direction from these people and do exactly the opposite. So I say, when they want to completely isolate us from each other, what should we do? We should start trying to look for ways that we can build community, meet people physically, not be isolated. If you know what they're doing, you can counter-program it. And so, you know, one of the key things that you need to do is to make sure that you're outside their monetary system. Make sure that you've got some kind, as much as you can be. Make sure that you've got backup for this infrastructure, this fragile infrastructure that is very shaky. As a matter of fact, we're going to have today in the third hour, our guest is going to be Jack Lawson, who wrote Civil Defense Manual, and you'll find that at civildefensemanual.com. And we're going to talk about how you can hedge your bets in terms of this fragile infrastructure. But before we do, there's just a couple of things that I want to talk about before Jack joins us. He hasn't joined us yet, has he, Travis? Okay. A couple of things that I wanted to talk about that I didn't get to, which is really, you know, what is happening with our politicians flip-flopping as they do, not just on the Constitution, not just on the FISA stuff, but flip-flopping on the abortion issue, as we've seen, especially in Arizona. There was an op-ed piece from Star Parker, and she grew up and with a single black mom who was on welfare and that, and she's gotten herself out of that situation, and she has looked at this and understood the trap that presents to everybody. And it's especially true when they offer it as universal basic income. And that's what the stimulus checks and the lockdowns were really about. It was to condition people. It was about moving that Overton window. And she wrote an op-ed piece, A Nation Committing Suicide. She quotes historian Arnold Toynbee, who said, an autopsy of history would show that all great nations commit suicide. The latest Wall Street Journal showed America, said America pulls back from the values that it once defined it. And they compared responses in a couple of polls from 1998 to 2023, 25-year period. And they asked them questions about three things: their attitude, their how they valued patriotism, religion, and children. Well, over that 25-year period from 1998 to 2023, the number of people who said that these three things were very important. For patriotism, it declined from 70% of the people who said patriotism was important to 38%. In terms of religion, it went from 62% to 39%. In terms of children being very important to them, 59 to 30%. In other words, about a 50% decline on these things. Patriotism, religion, family. In 2020, there were 56 births in the U.S. for every 1,000 women, ages 15 to 44. But back in 1990, there were 70.9. So from 71 to 56 in terms of the number of births. And 40% in 2021, 40% of the babies were born to unmarried mothers. Because we don't value marriage, we don't value a partnership in raising children either, any more than we value the children. This op-ed piece on LifeSite News talks about how denying the humanity of unborn children has led to our current cultural madness. They use the example of somebody thinking that they're Napoleon. You know, what if you know, somebody puts on a costume and they walk around and saying, I'm Napoleon, you need to salute me. I've used this metaphor many times, talking about trannies. And they point out, but of course, what if this crazy person also had lots of money? And they could pay this big entourage of people to accompany them and also pretend that they were Napoleon. So it wouldn't make them Napoleon, but, you know, it would have maybe a little bit more effect. Who knows? As they would walk around and say, make way for Napoleon. And if you don't, we're going to punish you. We're going to take your job or whatever. That is exactly what the Biden administration with all their money is doing with the tranny stuff, doing with people like so-called Rachel Levine. The woman of the year, this guy that's there. And so what this person was saying, he said, I submit that this all happened when we pretended that the unborn child is not fully human. You know, we started going 2 + 2 = 5. Well, that certainly is a component of it. And they do have a point here. But I think the issue is something that is much deeper than that, and actually upstream of that. I've said for the longest time that not only is that politics is downstream from culture, and I read an op-ed piece where somebody said, no, that's not true. And I said, well, it is true. And I disagreed, and I talked about how I disagreed with this op-ed piece on that. Politics is downstream from culture, and culture is downstream from our religion. And this abortion stuff is downstream from that as well. You know, you look at what is happening in Arizona now in 1864, as I said yesterday, they had no pictures of babies in the womb developing, as we do. We've even got moving pictures of babies in the womb. Years and years ago, before they would show us a great deal, you know, National Geographic would show pictures of a baby elephant in the womb, or a baby dog, or a cat, or something like that. And you could see the hair, the fur, and all the rest, all the details. Just a small dog, cat, elephant, whatever. A dolphin, you know. But they didn't do it with kids. But even though they don't want to show that, we have seen that. We have more physical information. All these people say, well, I don't want to, don't talk to me about religion. I'm all about science, and I'm all about show me this and show me that. Well, we can show you that, and we can show you the science. And we know about DNA, and we know so much more about the gestation of children than they did in the 1864 time frame. They even had Ernst Haeckel, who was Darwin's bulldog, creating fake drawings and saying, you know, the ontogeny and development recapitulates phylogeny. And it was a lie. It was a deliberate lie. It didn't look anything at all like the different stages of a human being developing. So they were in the dark, weren't they? No, they weren't. They didn't have our photographic ability or computer ability or imaging capability, but they knew they were created in the image of God. And they had principles that allowed them to see things that we can't see if we don't have those principles. They knew that they were created in the image of God. They knew that God created humanity. That gave them discernment that we don't have, even though we've got the pictures right in front of us. And so, you know, when we look at everybody pouring cold water on what happened with this 1864 law, and again, this is not activist judges. These judges just said, okay, well, we just had Roe v. Wade removed, and the law that is there, while Roe v. Wade was in, they passed a law saying 15 weeks, but they said, well, no, the law that precedes that was not repealed, is from 1864. And it says you don't have abortions except for the life of the mother. And this is what the American Medical Association had to say in 1871. I like this from this LifeSite news article. Listen to what they had to say. This is the AMA in 1871. No other doctrine appears to be consonant with reason or physiology, but that which admits the embryo to possess vitality from the very moment of conception. Abortion is a work of destruction, the wholesale destruction of unborn infants. The ethics of the AMA should be, thou shalt not kill. Oh, wait a minute, talking about the Bible here. This commandment is given to all without exception. It matters not at what stage of development his victim may have arrived. It will be unlawful and unprofessional for any physician to induce abortion. Abortionists are men who cling to a noble profession only to dishonor it. Abortionists are false brethren, said the AMA in 1871. Abortionists are educated assassins, said the AMA. Modern Herods and executioners. These men should be marked as Cain was marked. They should be made the outcasts of society. Did you catch all those biblical references? We're talking about Herod. We're talking about Cain. We're talking about the Ten Commandments. They even identify this as a commandment that is paramount. You see, America was a Christian nation operating under Christian principles. That gave them discernment to see things that we can't see even with our fancy 4D ultrasound. They could see the truth because everything is downstream from religion. And that is how we commit national suicide. But I think it's kind of interesting that the Republicans in the Arizona House are trying to block this repeal while the Democrats are adamantly trying to repeal it. And then you have Trump and Carrie Lake and now even Sean Hannity cheering on the radical Democrat abortionists. And so I ask, as the AMA said in 1871, are people like Sean Hannity and Carrie Lake and Donald Trump, are they false brethren? Are they the rhinos? You know, we're told that anybody who doesn't support Trump is a rhino. What about the people who reject traditional conservative principles? Are they not the rhinos? The people who are aligning themselves with the Democrats to fight to kill children? So we can win an election, so that Carrie Lake can win, so that Trump can win. What? That's going to be the reason that we're going to kill babies? Are they going to start with a cap? Murder for Trump? Is that what we're going to do now? Are they the people who cling to the Republican Party in order to dishonor it? Are they the false brethren of the Republican Party? Are they assassins? I think they are, quite frankly. People like Sean Hannity, and I'm going to play for you before we go connect with our guest. I want to play for you what Sean Hannity had to say.
And the people on the left are so desperate, attacking Trump now for an Arizona Supreme Court ruling that upholds what is a Civil War era law banning abortion. This will be fixed in the next week or two. Let not your heart be troubled. I can pretty much assure that will happen. Trump opposes the law. End this ruling, or you can believe Joe's make pretend Donald Trump that doesn't exist. And you know what? Arizona's governor is a Democrat. The state's attorney general is a Democrat. The state legislature is almost evenly divided. If Democrats, you want to get rid of the law, well, you have a chance right now to get rid of it. And I would advise you, get rid of it. They would rather use it as a political tool ahead of November. Most politicians on the left do not actually care about making your life better.
And these talking heads on Fox News and these Republicans like Fox and Carrie Lake, they don't care about life. They don't care about children. They will rip children apart alive in order to achieve their objective, which is what? Money and power. It's absolutely reprehensible to see what Sean Hannity has become. And so he's cheering on these radical Democrats, cheering them on to allow people to kill their kids. Why? So Trump can win election? You know, I saw this kind of pandering and profiteering from Sean Hannity when I was at the Bundy Ranch. You know, he was out there. I'll talk to you, Cliven, but you're going to have to make sure that nobody else can talk to you and all the rest of this stuff. And it's like, okay, good luck with that. You know, I had, what was his name? Pete Santilli, when I first got there. I'm the liaison with the Bureau of Land Management and Alternative Media. So if you want to talk to them, talk to me first. All right, Pete, I'll let you know if I need you. Thanks. And Sean Hannity tried to do the same thing. And I had to go to the Bundy house in order to be able to get sufficient internet because they were throttling it until Saturday when everybody showed up. They wanted to be able to spy on everybody's phone. So it was like everybody had full coverage for a moment. It was amazing. They had throttled it all through the week out there where everybody was meeting. The only place I could get it was to go back to the Bundy's house because they had a direct connection. And so he told me that. He said, well, I can't interview because I made this agreement with Sean. It's like, well, okay, we won't do it in the house. We'll do it outside the house and we'll put the, you know, the trees behind you. You won't know where we are. You know, you need to have coverage of this stuff. And so we did it that way. And, but you know, he was all about getting a monopoly. He didn't care what happened to Clive and Bundy. His people booked it out of there before everything happened. And, they were told that it was all solved and they got out of there. But you know, when you look at all of this, and, you know, cheering this, Sean Hannity says, if Democrats, he said, Democrats, if you want to get rid of this law, well, you got a chance right now to get rid of it. And I would advise you to get rid of it, he said. Let's just understand what he's talking about here. This is not a law he's talking about getting rid of. He's talking about getting rid of babies. So let's just rephrase it for you, Sean. What you're saying to them, Sean, is if Democrats, if you want to get rid of these babies, well, you got a chance right now to get rid of these babies. And I'd advise you to get rid of these babies because they're in the way of me and Trump and our plans for money and for audience and all the rest of this stuff. I am so sick of these Republicans. I am so sick of these rhinos. I can't stand it. Well, we're going to try to establish a contact. Is it time? Should I keep going? Or? Okay, we're having trouble getting a hold of our guest here. So what do you want me to do? You want me to keep going with this or you want me to take a break? So, does it make it easier?
Go to break.
Okay, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe, so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Joining us now is Jack Lawson. He has civildefensemanual.com. Always great to talk to Jack, and I wanted to talk to Jack again because we see a lot of trouble spots being escalated. We've got a lot of infrastructure issues, and of course, infrastructure was the very first thing he and I talked about years ago. Thanks for joining us, Jack. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good.
Thanks for having me on again, David.
Okay, thank you for coming on. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about you sent some clips and of some things that we can pull up, and I've got those now. So we got a little bit of technical issues that have I think we're getting them squared away. Tell us, what's your concern right now as we look at the global and domestic situations? What's your major concern in terms of preparation and threat?
Well, my major concern is the drum I've been beating for some probably close to 50 years, and that is that Americans are ill-prepared. They're totally underprepared for any kind of disruption. As I've gone through five some decades of this, it's gotten more heightened because of the obvious issue of our reliance on technology. Mm-hmm. It's just to me, that's one of the biggest issues. There's a number of issues. I can't even go over them all. I mean, we've got a border, but we don't have a border. you know, it's not even a line in the sand anymore. Maybe a fence there, but people think it's a cattle fence or whatever. Keep the sheep in from going south to Mexico to Cancun. There are a myriad of issues to me that any one of which could cause us and will cause us problem. One of the biggest, I've got a good friend, he deals in this. We use 4,000 terabytes of energy in this country. We've cut down on the production capability, and he said we're going to be massively short by summer's end here, maybe earlier than that. And this is what he deals with: redundancy of power. Mm-hmm. For major corporations, Microsoft being one of them. And he's advising all these people, if you got a backup generator, get another backup generator and get plenty of fuel, because you're not going to have any electricity. Mm. So your functionality is going to be dead in the water.
And it's looking even worse long term, because they keep adding things to the grid, saying, I'm sorry, you can't have a gas stove, you can't have a gas car. Everything's going to be on the grid, as they are destroying the grid like a bunch of gremlins. And so that's their long term plan. It's not going to get any better. It's going to continue to get worse. It's going to be more expensive, more unreliable, and they are adding, as I was talking about earlier in the program, you look at artificial intelligence and the burden that's going to be, in addition to other things that are already there. That's a massive power consumption that's being added to the grid, along with all these other things, while they're pulling it apart. But then you've got things like the Baltimore Bridge, which nobody saw that coming, and look at the knock-on effects that could happen from that if they can't get that thing open quickly. That is something that, whether it was deliberate or whether it was an accident, it just shows how fragile our infrastructure is.
Yes. In regards to that ship hitting the Francis Scott Key Bridge, I find it interesting. Again, this is, what do you believe? I find it interesting that the last 2 minutes of the black box disappeared. That ship took a sharp 90-degree turn. This is obviously well within the capabilities of any major country like Russia or China conducting a sabotage issue like this. You drive your car down the road. If somebody is intent to get after you, they can get into a modern car now.
Yeah,
and this has been proven. There was a journalist that was coming out with a article critical of the CIA that all of a sudden ended up running into trees at 130 miles an hour out in California.
That's right.
And the NSA director said, "Oh yeah, well, we can do that. I mean, we wouldn't do that, but you know how much you want to believe that's another story." But there's just too much of a capability. One way or another, I think that there's probably was American influence and backing of the plot or the issue that killed all the Russians. Mm-hmm. In the theater over there. Mm-hmm. And I think they are getting their payback. And our country does not want to admit that they have the capability of this. It's just too frightening for people to realize.
That's right.
There are so many issues.
They'll never admit anything like that. And then shortly after that, we had another large tanker that lost power. They got that under control with some tugboats. But, you know, I said at the time, when you look at it, that was the key. Why did it lose power? And they wouldn't even, mention the idea that it could be something about cybersecurity. And I don't know how these things are set up, but everything is so automated now that you can do something on the side and you can have devastating effects in terms of systems that are all interconnected to the computers. We saw months ago, we had the FCC, the FAA, they shut down all American airports. Why? Well, because they had this ancillary system on the side, the NOTAM system, that was reporting to them if there was going to be any issues anywhere around an airport, anything on the runway, anything like that. And if that system goes down, they just shut down all air travel for about 12 hours. And they said, oh, it's not a hack. And yet, after it came up, about an hour and a half later, Canada's NOTAM system went down. And they shut things down very quickly, but it didn't stay shut down. I think in both these cases, it was some kind of a blackmail, and they paid it off. It took them a while to come to that decision in the U.S. I think after they saw what had happened in the U.S., when it happened in Canada, they did it. So they're not going to admit that there was a cyber attack. They're never going to admit that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it could, even if it was an accident.
Yeah, just like the Nord Stream pipeline was blown up by the Russians.
That's right.
That's a laugh and a half, you know.
That's right.
They'll never get to the bottom of that. They've gotten to the bottom. There are people who know what's going on there, but you're never going to hear the truth of the matter. It's too alien for most people to comprehend.
That's right.
I think that it's, you know, there's a number of things. Take the airport situation. Take the aircraft cowlings coming off, wing flaps coming off that side. Take that out of the picture. People have to realize they get in an airplane. I'm both private and helicopter rated. I've flown quite a few hours, but this is quite a while ago. And now the modern airliner, and I've got friends that are retired airline pilots, the modern airliner is the only thing the pilot does, and the co-pilot, is basically check engine controls, flap settings, directional, keep the electronics, ensure that they're working. But they don't fly that plane.
Yeah.
That plane takes off under their supervision. They probably do more at takeoff than they ever do anything else. All during that flight, it's controlled by a computer system. When it goes to land, it's basically controlled by a computer system with the pilots overseeing it and taking over in the last few minutes. That is one part of this thing. The other part, I think, that people don't realize is the obvious failability of these systems. They're,
yes.
Yeah. Everybody's hacking everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I just had a situation where it's getting to be a technological collusion and collision. It's absolutely beyond comprehension how complex these systems are getting, trying to keep them from getting hacked. And in the process, when you put two-step authentication on, that type of thing, your bank system goes crazy and trying to download to an accounting system. We've been going through this for the last 3 months, and we get it going. And you talk to the people at the companies, either the bank or the accounting company, and they're pretty much at a loss. So you tell me what's protected, you know.
It's kind of interesting. The guy, the comedian that plays Mr. Bean, was his name? Rowan Atkinson, was that? Is that what?
Yeah.
And he's an electrical engineer, but he's very wealthy, obviously. And he likes to buy exotic, state-of-the-art sports cars and stuff like that. And he says, well, with these cars, you don't so much drive them as you manage them. It's like a drive-by-wire thing. He goes, and it kind of takes some of the fun out of it, you know, because there's so many systems that are in the way. Well, you better hope that those systems are functioning correctly. You better hope that somebody hasn't messed with them. And you were talking about the journalist, and that was probably back in 2013, Michael Hastings, that hit that tree. Except that his engine went straight, and you know, he's going really fast. I got some pictures of him going really fast, and then there's an explosion. His engine was found in the direction that he was traveling, way down the road, and yet his car veered off to the right and hit a tree. And they said, "Oh, he died because he hit the tree." No, the engine was ejected before he hit the tree. And hitting the tree is not going to eject your engine; it's going to push it into you. You know, if you're doing something like that and it caught fire, then he had already told people that, "Hey, I'm doing this special report." And he would go out and look at, he had a rental Mercedes. I think he rented it, but it was a Mercedes. And it had more of the bells and whistles on it than the other cars at the time did. This is before everybody had elements of, remote control or autonomous control on the cars. But the Mercedes had quite a few of those on there. And he would go out and look underneath the car before he would go somewhere because he thought they were after him. Even before we found that out, I'd been talking to Eric Peters and to another guest we have all the time, Goat Tree, talking about these different hacking contests that they were doing, taking over cars and taking control of them. And that was, 12, 13, 14 years ago. So that kind of stuff has been going on for a long time. So that was really child's play for them to do that type of thing.
Hastings died prematurely. You move the time up to now.
Yeah.
Any expose that he did would just be shrugged off.
Yeah.
The government agencies used to have some type of fear of being humiliated.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care now. They don't care what people know.
Yeah.
They don't care what they do. They don't care if it becomes public. There is no longer plausible deniability. They don't really care about it.
They can just shout you down. They've got this big megaphone and they can silence you and they can shout louder than you can. So they don't really care about any of this stuff.
It's a sad situation when you get into, let me go back to my prime directive. I'm going to beat the drum again. I really urge Americans to store food, store water. And I know this is something you've always advocated. Get your know your neighbors and organize for a common protection. I think that of all the issues we've got going, we have a real powder keg of polarization in the country. It's people on the left and people on the right that want to go at each other's throat.
Yes.
And in the next however many months prior to and even after the election, no matter who wins or who becomes president, I think you're going to see an increase in the amount of violence that goes on. Is it going to be a general uprising by Trump supporters if he leaves? No, I don't think so. Is it going to be sporadic instances of people losing their cool? I do think so. On the left, if Trump wins, I think you're going to see nothing but interference with his term and his ability to carry out anything he intends to do as the president. So I urge people to have some type of supply. 90% of people in this country probably got enough food if they eat the cake mix in their cupboard. They've got enough food for probably 7 days. They could keep themselves going to eating. Outside of that, it's a real issue. The system can break down very easily, and you'll see empty stores like you've never seen, not even during COVID. So I urge people to do that. Store food, water, life-sustainable medicines that you need, and get to know your neighbors and have something to protect yourself with.
That's right. Yeah, we're looking at these spot shortages and stuff like that. And of course, we even saw this in 2020. As soon as they had the lockdown, all of a sudden, farmers are destroying food on the at the farm or on the ranch. And yet the grocery store shelves are empty because everything is just, messed up. They have it in the wrong format to be able to sell at retail, something that's similar. But, Annie Jacobson, who just did a book on nuclear war. She's done a lot of things with the Pentagon about DARPA and about Operation Paperclip and stuff like that. She just did a book about nuclear war. And she said, most people are going to die not from the blast, not from radiation, but from starvation. Correct. And so even with a nuclear war, it's that having that backup food supply that is the key issue, isn't it?
Anything that disrupts this fragile system we have.
Yeah.
There's what's called the just in time. You go to buy a loaf of bread in a store. You check out at the counter, and at 10 o'clock at night, about when the store closes, they tally up how many loaves of bread they've sold, what they've got left in their inventory. And an order goes to the bakery, and probably by 4 to 6 o'clock, there's a truck rolling out of that bakery to that store with the loaves of bread that they automatically order through this inventory system. Mm-hmm. It's just in time. The point of this system is to cut down in the amount of reserve food that's sitting around in warehouses. You've got the cost of the warehouse, you've got the cost of warehouse employees, you've got spoilage, you've got huge amounts of money in the inventory that's within that store. So there is no reserve. That's part of our food system that's just disappeared as far as the reserve goes.
Yeah.
It's just in time. And that makes it all the more dangerous than what it's been over the years. You know, everything is automating to the point to where the bean counters, a lot of them don't have a common sense brain cell in their head, make these decisions. I've seen some atrocious situations happen. And it's all from people that just don't have any common sense or any kind of connection to reality, but sure, they're running the system. So sure, you got to put up with it.
And it's getting worse all the time. You sent us a bunch of clips here, and I'm not sure. I've got them here in case you want to call them out. I can show any of these clips that you want to talk about.
I'm talking about the Justin's in time, direct store distribution system.
Okay, that's this
right
here.
I don't know if you can see that one.
That's DSD. That's right. That's what you've been talking about, the just-in-time. And I remember, you know, and of course, when we look at just-in-time, that is the Baltimore Bridge issue, right? The Francis Scott Key thing. If it was an accident or if it was sabotage, the bottom line is that they've got ships trapped inside there. It's going to be a while before they can bring anything back in there, but you know, they can very easily break those connections with any kind of accident or with any kind of sabotage.
Yeah, and the system itself has got enough failabilities without somebody conducting malicious warfare against us by disrupting a system. Any one of a number, just a myriad of issues that make that system function can fail at any one time.
That's right.
And you talk about hacking, I think probably just about as dangerous as hacking is what some of these people running these systems, they're totally incompetent. I'm starting to see a collision. Like I said, we spent an hour and a half with our local water company trying to get, they'd updated their system. And the person that was in charge of this at the water company, we found she didn't know what she's talking about. She was at a loss too. Hour and a half later, finally got a resolution on this. I don't know where she went, what she did, but we could not get into the system. And, you know, it's a matter of paying a bill, and they're not going to shut me off. But it's just there's collisions of updating, and there's collisions of dual authentication of these systems. There's so many issues coming into play. They're complex. It's almost like these computer systems get together and they turn into Frankenstein monsters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they call it Frankenware. Absolutely.
It's just these little side issues just continue to snowball and build on each other.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the key thing. You know, you got a little thing over here, and then that gets compounded at the next stage. And before you know it, you got a system that doesn't really work. I remember George Gilder talked about life after Google a few years ago. He wrote a book about that. and it's like, yeah, we would all like to fantasize about life without Google in our life, wouldn't we? But what he was saying was that, you know, you got all these different, you got to remember all these different codes to get in different places and many other aspects of that. But of course, they will take the problems that they create and they will use that to try to direct us into something like biometric identification and permission to get into these systems and say, yeah, you don't want to really remember all those codes.
Isn't that amazing how convenient all these new talk about the mark of the beast from the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about these systems they're coming up with. Just amazing how they've always got a fallback of digital currency or some biometric issue or eye scans that just blow me away. They're moving too quickly in this stuff. It's starting to compound itself. AI is supposed to sort it out. I see these commercials on TV about AI and go to this company and they've got this. And somebody's sitting drinking an energy drink while the person's cleaning the office at 11 o'clock. And then all of a sudden, they've come up with a massive new program that's going to solve anything. Well, will it put food on the table? No.
No.
Will it give you water? No. All this stuff is artificial. That's and right. It's an illusion that people are living in.
Yes, that's right. It's a virtual reality. And all that virtual reality is going to come crashing down on us, and we're going to be looking around. It's like, well, I don't know how to do anything. That's the key thing about your book, is that it's got practical advice about how to do things, even when we're talking about food that's going to last longer. You know, how to preserve eggs, very simple things like that. You got a free chapter about water and how to maintain your water supply. But you spent time in Zimbabwe. I was just talking about inflation and how it gets away from us. Probably one of the most familiar examples of that was in Zimbabwe, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. My in-laws got their money out of the country years before. My father-in-law was a very incredible person, very visionary. But you could see what was going to happen. And I had to buy this. I couldn't believe it because I can't find it. It's all been used for toilet paper, wallpaper, burning in fires. The Zimbabwe currency, I just bought $100 trillion note.
There
I've got a lot
right
of them. Because, $100 trillion note. And now they're coming out with a gold-backed currency. That will work until they get enough people drawn into it. And then the leadership of those countries rape the treasury and drive the thing into the ground again. This is what they do.
That's right.
They don't have any conscience towards this.
Well, we're going to need $100 trillion bill pretty soon. As a matter of fact, there was some idiot who was saying, you know, we could fix the deficit if we just have a $1 trillion bill or something like that. It was something crazy like that. But they're adding $1 trillion every 90 days to the deficit, so it's not going to be that long.
I'll never forget a story I was told about Germany in 1923, the Weimar Republic, right after World War One, because of massive amounts of debt put on the German government for war reparations, they started doing the same thing we're doing. They started printing currency. Mm-hmm. It got so out of control, the guy running the central banks over there had a heart attack and died. And when it got to the point to where the inflation was out of control, like it got in Zimbabwe, the story was a lady in an apartment complex heard this clanging and banging, and she goes and looks out her door, and out her door is one of her neighbors, and she's got this big bed sheet tied around what's clanging up the stairs. They were bedpans. The woman had bought 20 bedpans. And the neighbor said, what have you got? I've got bedpans. I bought 20 of them. What do you buy 20 bedpans for? They're worth something.
Yeah.
The next day, they were worth twice as much.
Wow.
And that is basically where this thing goes, and they can't stop it. It gets it becomes a headless monster, trying to satisfy debt by printing money with no backing or no basis is a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I know. My wife was over there. My brother-in-law was an accountant. Over in Zimbabwe.
Now that's something for your resume. I was an accountant in Zimbabwe when they had the world's inflation.
Yeah. Well, they call it chartered over there. Anyway, it takes my mother-in-law and my wife to dinner. $70 meal. They go out and he's got two huge oversized suitcases, and they're full of endless digit denomination bills. And they had a $70 meal. I've got the receipt of this showing in my book. But they had a $70 meal, and all the time they're eating, it took the staff that whole time to count the money. And it was for $70. And it just blew me away. I mean, you'd think when walking into the restaurant, he's taking somebody for a meal before he hits the airport with those suitcases. But it was just the money to pay the lunch bill. And It's the way to thank God. People think this is a laugh. My father-in-law owned it was the biggest printing company in Africa. And he had to pay his workers he had very, very loyal workers. He had to pay his workers at noon so they could go out and buy groceries. Because if you paid them 4 or 5 hours later, the groceries cost twice as much.
Wow.
And people were moving money around in a wheelbarrow and, people didn't want the money. They wanted a wheelbarrow. That was worth more money than the money. And it just got out of control. I don't know how far down the road we're going to go. We are going to have more of this. So I think everything's being held in check. because it's an election year. And that is so sad for Americans.
And I think I agree. I think it's going to get really bad really quickly after the election. And then it's going to more, gasoline on the fire by getting both sides right now. You got the people who are heavily partisan in one party or the other. Both of them are being fed this narrative. I go to the conservative press and I go to the mainstream liberal press. And it's amazing to see how each side is absolutely certain their guy's got the election sewn up at this point. They're creating that narrative, that expectation, whether you are a Democrat or you're a Republican, if the other guy wins, it's because democracy is over. That election was stolen. We're going to have to fight. They're creating that. I've never seen anything like this where there's this total disconnect between the two sides, and with the information that both sides are getting, each side absolutely convinced that their guy is going to win. It's going to be a theft if they don't.
Yeah, if your readers hear somebody's a threat to our democracy, replace the word democracy with the word bureaucracy. That's what the left is pushing for. It is a total. I often wonder, I read a lot of books about life in the Soviet Union in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and the 50s, when the transition took place after Joseph Stalin died in 1953. I see things here as I'm wondering if we've got as much freedom as they had. Mm-hmm. I read stories about people going to plays, and it seemed like a normal society. Mm-hmm. It was communist run, but a normal society in the 30s. And they're going to a theater, and they're going to listen to music at a park. Yet I see things here, and I'm often wondering what have we got now? I think this creeps on over people so quickly. Yes. That they don't realize what they've lost.
Yeah, we look at the cancelization, how people get canceled and that type of thing. That used to be a really powerful story about Stalinist Russia, the way he canceled, a good example of it was Shostakovich, famous composer. And he just took a dislike to one of his pieces, and he premiered this piece. Stalin was there for the premiere. All the critics loved it. But then Stalin said, oh, I don't like it. Everybody became this outsider, absolutely canceled him. And yet, it was something that was really only available to Stalin to do that type of canceling. Today, because of the power of social media, the mob can cancel you just as easily.
Yeah, I think it's probably centrally driven. But you look at Russell Brand, they pick somebody out and they start chopping away at this person. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know who Russell Brand is. He's some type of a commentator or whatever. But the bottom line is, if they decide they want to take down a person they don't like, that's exactly what they proceed to try to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's very easy for them to do that. Let's talk a little bit about, what happens with the open borders. Are we going to start seeing organized gangs that are, some people suggested that may be the possibility when you look at the demographics?
They're here already.
Yeah, but I mean, from this standpoint, we've seen this in the Soros-controlled district attorneys, where they just come in and loot and rob and that type of thing. And they've gotten very organized in places like San Francisco. Do you expect to see that this is going to start, going all over the country doing this type of thing? And absolutely. I think it will. How do we protect against that? What's a good way to protect
against that? Well, that's where, like, in my neighborhood group here, we have a dual purpose. We don't operate under Neighborhood Watch. Neighborhood Watch it's a great idea. It's everybody looking out for what's going on. However, it has the enforcement of law enforcement. That is what enforces. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. We have our own signs. They're a sultry looking woman's eyes that basically tells everybody we're watching you. Mm-hmm. And if somebody does have a problem, we're on the phone to each other and we're talking about it, and we notify each person here, and we do our own protection should we have to. Now, we don't advocate everybody running around with a gun, but if somebody ends up breaking into a house in my neighborhood, they're probably going to get a 12-gauge shotgun poked up their nose. people here are to the point to where most of them have moved out of these areas. I've got a guy coming that was one of the largest counties in California, communication director. And he says it's a war zone out there. Wow. He's lived all his life out there, other than when he was in Cuba. He's a refugee from Cuba. His father was thrown in the hard labor camp. He loathes communism. He saw it firsthand. And the bottom line is he's trying to get out of there before the elections, because he said, I listen to every communication in this county between the county commissioners, the mayors, the chiefs of police, the sheriff department, EMTs, fire department, emergency room. And he said, it's an absolute war zone at night. And he said, he can't wait to get out of there. His wife just retired. And they're just waiting for a couple days here. He's going to know when he can retire. I think the biggest reason is he has a massive, he's 20-some people working for him. He has a massive responsibility with this system.
Mm-hmm.
And they just put an entirely new mountaintop system in. And he's concerned that they can't find anybody to replace him. So he's got an issue there. But he tells me it's a war zone. He said they're shutting off alarm systems with cell phone jammers.
Wow.
And these people are sophisticated gangs.
Wow.
They case a place, and this is going to more and more going to happen in the big city. But at some point, it's going to start to bleed out into the rest of the countryside. So what do? You prepare and you get your eyes and ears tuned in to what's going on in your neighborhood, and organize with your neighbors. Mm-hmm. We have a radio network we set up, and if we need to have somebody notified, we can squelch everybody in this community.
Is that your patrol formation that you're talking about there?
No, that's something from military days.
Oh, okay.
The patrol formations are basically movements of armed people in either an offensive or defensive posture, and they're movements to put people in specific places, so to prevent ambush, and should you get ambushed, you can respond. Mm-hmm. And you can flank your attacker if from some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's a totally different deal.
Oh, okay.
I sent those for you guys to have on hand at some point. Don't ask me. I just do stuff like that. Anyway.
But it's a good example of the breadth of what you're talking about in your book. I mean, whether you're talking about food or water or something like this, in a real societal breakdown situation, how does the military do it? For people that have not been in the military, that don't have any of that experience, you can find that kind of information in Civil Defense Manual.
Yes, and you're going to need that type of thing if it gets really, really bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're going to need to be able to know how to move, and we don't hear run around camouflage uniforms with a family shotgun. What we do, though, is have people that are advised of different tactical. We got five basic tactics that we use. Those tactics will defeat anybody. They're simplistic,
mm-hmm.
but they're things that the military has variations of. We just make it into simple. Into five simple tactical solutions for somebody to defend an area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so hard to learn. People spend a year in war college. Officers go through huge amounts of training. Troops go through practical application. We have the theory, but if we have to activate and do things, everybody's got in their head what we're going to need to do. And mm-hmm. this is what's very important. I think the biggest thing is that if people go to www.civildefensemanual.com, they will, and look under the top tab that says, what's in the book, what's in the Civil Defense Manual. It'll give a list of table of contents. It'll also give a list of, issues that you're not going to see any other place. And why do I put them in there? All of this together, I homogenize into surviving. And surviving with other people in your neighborhood, because you are not going to be able to survive alone. That's the bottom line.
That's
people
right.
think, oh, I'll get my shotgun and two or three of my neighbors. We're going to have our shotguns. We're going to do guard duty. Unless you have it organized, that's not going to last very long. The guy with the shotgun that's in his house without any neighbors, he's got to sleep sometime. What's he going to do? Have his 8-year-old son with a shotgun there? It's something that you need to have cooperation with your neighbors.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely right. And even if you don't have a societal breakdown, If you got that connection with your neighbors, maybe you can have something to do with the local government. Make sure that you got some people that are not going to be predators. That's one of the key takeaways, I think, for 2020. You talk about the end of democracy is really the end of bureaucracy is really what they're talking about. And we were ruled by bureaucrats. That's what I said in 2020. I said, why am I going to go vote here? There's not anybody locally or nationally that hasn't turned this thing over to a bunch of unelected bureaucrats. So why would I vote for any of these characters? But you could make
it. Isn't that true?
Yeah, you can make a situation where, you know, if you know your neighbors and you organize before things start to happen like that, you can organize to make sure that these people are going to kind of be a check for what's going to be imposed from the national or maybe even the state level on people. And so there's when they want to isolate us and they want to put us into a digital world, we need to be thinking how we can do exactly the opposite, because they've designed their plans a very long time ago. They've been practicing them, and they're a trap to enslave us. So we need to do exactly the opposite of we can see where they're headed. The difficult thing is doing something else to counter it.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to succeed. There's just too, you know, we've got one thing in this kind of, it's almost in our DNA, what we have in the American mind. We have a rebelliousness that I think is probably as the same or worse than what our founding fathers and the citizenry then had. I think we still have a rebelliousness. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people that have been propagandized into submission as far as being men feminized and there's just an inability of people to see a real crisis because they live in illusion so much. A lot of people have lived under a nanny state. I see it here. They moved from California, or they move from New York, and these people can't conceive of doing things by yourself.
Yeah.
Unless the government tells you who could do it, you know, and
that's right.
I tell them, you know, we had a conversation. They got a little upset about some of the things they're talking about. I said, look, I'm not talking about doing this now. I'm talking a worst case scenario, taking cars and blocking off the road as police do in a serpent. I show this in the book. There's one of the diagrams I sent you. It's a procedure the police use, and it's set up from a kinetic energy point of view to stop people from breaking through a blockade of cars. Mm-hmm. And I show that, and I told these people, they got upset about this. And I said, why don't you guys go out? There's about 11 of them. We kicked them out of our group. We told them they thought they were conservatives, but they aren't. And we said, why don't you guys create a neighborhood choir and see if that keeps people from breaking your door down, you know, if things go bad. But, you know, we deal with these people, and some of them are just misdirected. Now they're starting to think differently. And our group still functions. We have some hardcores. We've a lot of hardcore people that have been out there. Not necessarily all of them in the service. One of my best ones hasn't been in the service, but he's been in law enforcement, and he knows what can happen because he lived it in California.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. That's kind of like a war zone in some cases, right? By the way, I've got an interesting quote here, which I absolutely agree with him. I think he's right. This is on Rockfan, Brian Kinney, and thank you for the tip. He says, regarding the bridge impact, he thinks it's GPS spoofing. And I think that's very probable that it was something like that. It's been around for 30 years or more, less than $500 worth of equipment to pull it off. You can do it from nearby. The hacking verbiage is a red herring. I think that is very likely because, yeah, they've used GPS spoofing.
Yeah, that's a good point he brings up there.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point. That probably sounds more logical than trying to cut into a ship's navigation and control system.
Yeah, that's right.
What he's talking about and spoofing, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's going to be using GPS, yeah.
Exactly. You're 700 yards from a bridge. Oh, you got to take a left-hand sharp turn, you know, right toward the piling.
That's right. All you had to do is maybe install a cheap device up there and activate it from a spotter.
Yeah.
Doing that. That's right. On Rockfin.
I think people need to start looking at, I read the Bible once a day. I'm trying to do something about my heathen past. But the long and short of it is, I think we need to walk backwards. Not to absolute doctrine and dogma of religion, but the message. I saw a meme the other day. It was God talking to Jesus Christ, And he says, "How's it going, my son?" He said, "Well, father," he said, it was going pretty good, but now they're worshiping me. We're worshiping me. They're not worshiping the message that I brought to them." And I think that's critical. I think try to live by some type of a Christian ideal, but people better understand one thing. Unless you're capable of extreme violence, unless you're capable of it and you don't use it, you're not peaceful. You're harmless. People that don't know how to use violence, and I'm not advocating it.
Yeah,
I'm saying that you have to defend yourself, know how to use violence. If you can't do that, then you're harmless. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans, even with this independence, have gotten propagandized into, oh, zero tolerance, don't hurt anybody, blah, blah, blah. There comes a time when you're probably going to have to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And let me just say real quickly before we run out of time here, thank you for the tip, Michelle Obama and Dougalug. Thank you very much. He said, thank you. Have a drink on me and enjoy your weekend. Well, thank you. I can have a lot of drinks for $10. I can have several soft drinks or whatever.
I see some really good-looking strawberries coming out of a pail right behind you.
That's right. Yeah, it's if people want to take a look at the Civil Defense Manual, and again, it is very comprehensive, and you've got examples in there. Water is a very good example of that, and you make that available for free. People can get an idea of the kind of depth of information that you've got just looking at those free samples, and they're very useful. And it covers a wide variety of things. And if it's not something that is, things that you understand, but maybe it's not your area of expertise, you've partnered with other people who are experts in that. And that's the key thing. I've had so many people thank me after they got the Civil Defense Manual. And again, I've got it right here. It goes as a pair. We've been showing the thing, but it's a pair of manuals. And you only sell it as a pair because you want people to get the full picture, and you only sell it as a physical book because the computer is not necessarily going to be around. And so it's a great way for people to prepare so that they are able to defend themselves and protect their loved ones and others in the neighborhood. And to also, it's something that if nothing happens, at least you've met your neighbors and maybe you can come together and work on some other common problems that you can rally around. And so I think it's a great approach.
I think that that's one of the biggest things that we've gained in our neighborhood. We all know each other now.
Yeah.
We got an old gal that we were taking medicines to because she's very reclusive. We didn't know all the people around here, most of them didn't know anything about her. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up talking to her, and we asked people in the neighborhood, is there something, is there a handicap or do you have a disability? I mean, we're not going to play taxi cab driver, but we do want to know that we can help people if there's some type of an emergency.
That's right.
Because they're people, they're our neighbors. That's what we've always done in these cities, these places that we've formed, not just for commerce. It was, they were formed for people to help take care of each other and protect each other.
That's right. And it's one of these things where, you know, it's so difficult to get to know neighbors because nobody comes out of their house, typically. You don't usually even see anybody.
Community.
That's right.
We go to work, we come home, put the garage door down. Most people never get to know their neighbors. Now, I've always been different because I'm from a southern Minnesota farm family, and I've just been one of these people that
my neighbors are. This is a real felt need.
I want to know if I got some joker that's a problem my neighborhood, too.
That's right.
So I make an excuse to go around, but it's usually been, I've only had one instance of that in my entire life. Guy that I didn't like, and I told him, he started complaining about the black guy moving in, and I told him, don't you ever park your bicycle in front of my house again. Yeah. I said, that guy's a great guy. I know that guy. And this guy was a former city inspector from Los Angeles who was so sour. and, you know, people didn't like him. But the point being this, take care of your neighbors.
That's right.
They are what is going to help protect you.
And there's a real felt need for this, and people understand that. So it's a great way to build relationships, and who knows, it could save your life. Thank you so much for joining us, Jack Lawson. CivilDefenseManual.com, a great resource. Folks, have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, Jack, for joining us.
Thank you, David.
Let me tell you, the David Knight Show, you can listen to with your ears. You can even watch it by using your eyes. In fact, if you can hear me, that means you're listening to the David Knight Show right now. Yeah, good job. And you want to know something else? You can find all the links to everywhere to watch or listen to the show at thedavidknightshow.com. That's a website.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.